Good morning, everyone. Good morning, board members, Lahontan staff, and the public, and welcome to the regular meeting of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. My name is Jeff Lux, and I'm the board chair. Today's board meeting is being conducted in person from Barstow, from the City Hall, and via Zoom. AGP Video is hosting our board meeting. Thank you very much, AGP. And I want to thank the City of Barstow for making this facility available. It's really nice, and it's great to be here. At this time, I'd like to introduce the other members of the regional board here today. Rick Deaver from Crestline.
Good morning.
Kimberly Cox from Hellendale.
Good morning.
Robert Pierce from Bishop.
Good morning.
And our newest member, we give a warm welcome to Edwin Alonzo from Victorville. Welcome.
Good morning.
All right. We have a quorum. Thank you. And everyone's physically present in Barstow for today's meeting, and welcome. Our executive board staff are also here today in Barstow, including our executive officer, Ben Letton, assistant executive officer, Jan Zimmerman, Ms. Jan, our legal counsel, Elizabeth Barrett, our board clerk, Ariel LaFarga, and assistant board clerk, Kylie Bojan. That's close. Yeah. We will also be joined by other staff members for individual agenda items. For those who are present and wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out the orange card in the back of the room and hand the card to Ariel LaFarga. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comments through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment via Zoom, you should have submitted a virtual speaker card to our board clerk, Ariel LaFarga, and be in the Zoom meeting room. If you think you might be interested in commenting via Zoom, please contact our board clerk promptly at ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. That's ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. For those joining us via Zoom, your camera will be turned off and you'll be muted until it is your turn to speak. When you're done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you'll be placed on mute again. This meeting is being webcast and it's recorded, so please speak clearly. So, with those introductory comments, we're going to go to our first item. The first item being a public forum. This is an item where any person may address the Water Board regarding a matter within the Water Board's jurisdiction that is not related to an item on this meeting's agenda or currently pending before the Water Board. Ariel, do we have any speaker cards for public forum?
We do not, and we don't have anybody on Zoom.
And no one on Zoom, no speaker cards, and it looks like no one's out there jumping to the podium. So, all right, so public forum, we'll move past. And we'll go to item two, which is board meeting minutes. The Water Board will consider adopting the minutes of the regular meeting of May 6 and 7 in 2026. We've all read those minutes, I'm assuming, and kind of looked at them and made sure they're okay. Are there any motions or any discussion about the minutes?
I'll move approval of the minutes.
Ariel? Oh, sorry.
I'll second that.
Seconded. Seconded by Rick. Ariel, you want to do the honors? Thank you.
Member Dr. Cox?
Aye.
Member Deaver?
Aye.
Member Alonzo? Vice Chair Pierce?
Aye.
Chair Lux?
Aye. Thank you, Ariel. All right. Moving right along. Item three, reports by Water Board. The Water Board members will provide updates to the Water Board and the public on events and activities of interest. And first, we're going to hear from a State Board representative, Member Blumenfeld, and as a board members, as you are aware, we have a new, they kind of rotate the liaison from the State Board to us, and Mr. Blumenfeld is our new liaison. And so I'm assuming we're coming in by video on that one, via Zoom, yes?
Yes.
I am right here. Can you hear me?
There you are. Thank you very much for being here.
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone, particularly Chair Liu, Vice Chair Pierce, and board members. As was stated, my name is Jared Blumenfeld, and this is my first opportunity to join you as a State Board liaison, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know you all and working together, and thank you for having me. I actually was really thrilled to get Region 6 Lahontan. I had the privilege 10 years ago of walking the Pacific Crest Trail through hiking from Mexico to Canada. And as you guys might know, all the way from Lancaster, or actually in the Mojave, all the way up through Owens, Mono, Tahoe, all the way up to Susanville. I think I've walked the entire length of Region 6. So it's a particular privilege for me to have the opportunity to talk with you. The liaison report this month is largely a statewide update, as it always is. I want to make sure that I respect all of your time, and I'm not going to read the entire thing. I read it through a few times, and I was like, some of it's relevant, some of it isn't. So I picked out the few parts that I thought were particularly relevant to you, and will always endeavor to be as succinct as possible. The first is the Delta Conveyance Project hearing resumes on August 20th at the SUR rebuttal phase. This remains one of the State Board's most significant ongoing water rights proceedings and will continue into early September. Secondly, I want to thank Ben and the executive team and all of you for the leadership role you've played on tribal beneficial uses. Thank you guys for participating in our workshop. The State Board has released a draft guidance and Region 6 shared its experience. The consultation and public comment period remains open till August 31st. Thirdly, there are several important statewide regulatory actions moving forward this month, including draft small MS4 stormwater permits, the proposed utility wildfire general order, and the review of the state's water quality control plans and policies. The report also notes that drought response remains active in the Scott and Shasta watersheds, and their curtailments continue because of low flows and dry conditions. Finally, there are several important drinking water items. On August 18th, the State Board will consider adoption of the 26-27 Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Intended Use Plan, which establishes funding priorities for drinking water projects throughout the state. The Board has also approved updates to drinking water operator certification fees. So I'll end by saying mainly thank you for the work that you all do. I know it's complicated, time-consuming, and often all you hear is complaints. So I just want to thank you for your public service. It's extraordinary that this incredible region, Lahontan, has all of you serving as board members. And I know the time and dedication that it takes and the sacrifice that it takes. So I mainly just wanted to end by thanking each one of you and looking forward to meeting you in person soon. Teeny bit of background. I was the regional administrator for Region 9 US EPA and spent a lot of time on the TMDL for Lake Tahoe Clarity. Also spent a lot of time on Mono and Owens. And then I was the Cal EPA secretary for the first 4 years of the Newsom administration. So I've spent a lot of time and energy and really, really excited to dig in with all of you on these important issues. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Board Member Blumenfeld. And thank you for picking out the most relevant pieces for us to focus on. Board members, any questions for State Board Member Blumenfeld? Any questions? Again, thank you very much for being here, and we look forward to seeing you again. All right, now we'll proceed to updates from our board members. I'll just look to my left. Board Member Cox, Board Member Pierce, Board Member Devers, update? Board Member Alonso? No? Board Member Lux? Yes, I do. A couple. Thank you for asking. I've got a couple quick ones, and they're not nothing earth-shattering, but I was not able to make the all-staff meeting on July 21st, and I apologize to Jan and Ben and all the staff. I should have been there, but I couldn't do it. Anyway, thanks for having that. Did not go. I did attend the Water Board Chairs. They do a monthly chairs meeting via Zoom. I did attend that on August 3rd. I did so by phone. And three items were kind of key. One was an update on tribal beneficial use guidance from the state, which is pretty important for us. The second was some legislative updates. And the third were our regular regional updates, which we each all do, which they really didn't have time for. So we ended up doing the first two. And probably the most significant one, the one I'll just report back a little bit on, was the tribal beneficial use guidance from the state. And they're getting close to finalizing. They're in a comment period. So if you want to take a look at it, it's on their website and we can comment. And but in reality, a lot of the work that our staff has done, and Mike Plasiak and Ben and everyone, has influenced the state's guidance quite a bit. And they said that. And so kudos to us for kind of getting the ball rolling on tribal beneficial uses. So I don't think there were any big surprises in there, although it was a little difficult for me to catch it all because I was kind of on the move with a cell phone in my pocket. So anyway, that was the Water Board's chair meeting. And then the last thing I'll report on is I took the liberty of inviting Ben and some of my former colleagues and friends around the town of Truckee to do kind of a Donner Lake tour. And I didn't put down the date, but it was about a month ago, Ben, something like that. And Ben was kind enough to come, and we did a few hours looking at a bunch of different sites and issues and things and some restoration projects around Donner Lake just to kind of meet and greet. And the town people who were there, Bicky Bukar, who's the town engineer and public works director now for the town, Lisa Wallace, formerly with the Watershed Council, now retired, and Michelle Prestowitz, currently with the Watershed Council, which is a nonprofit that deals with all things Truckee River. So we just had a good informational session, and I think it was helpful, and there's been a little bit of follow-up, but nothing earth-shattering. So those are my reports. I'm guessing there are no questions, but you're welcome to throw one at me. All right, let's move on to our first item, which is item 4. Let me get my script here. This is on the uncontested or consent calendar, but I understand we're going to pull it because we do have some speakers online. But let me introduce it, and then we'll take the speakers. This is a revised waste discharge requirements for the Dutch Dairy in San Bernardino County. Since we do have two online, I believe one wants to speak, possibly two, we're going to pull this item from consent and go ahead and hear it. But I understand we are not going to have a staff presentation. There wasn't going to be one, so we're going to go right to the speakers. Is that the correct approach, Elizabeth?
Yes, that's correct. And if staff want to respond to comments, maybe you offer up that opportunity after we hear the public comments.
Okay, thanks. So let's go ahead, Ariel, and put the speakers through.
Okay, so we have two Zoom attendees that want to speak. We have Gene from Dairy Cares, but I do not see him on the Zoom platform, so we're going to go to Chris. Chris, you can unmute yourself. Chris, are you there? Chair Lux, I don't believe Chris wants to speak.
Okay. So I guess with that, we move on to, I guess we close the public comment portion, and let's move on. Would any board member, I already asked, does anyone out there want to mention on this, talk about this one, discuss it? Does not look like anyone does. So any motion to adopt from board or motion?
I'll move approval of the revised waste discharge requirements for Dutch Dairy.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Ariel?
Member Dr. Cox?
Aye.
Member Deaver?
Aye.
Member Alonzo?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dr. Pierce?
Aye.
Chair Dr. Lux?
Aye. All right, we are moving along. Item 5, closure and post-closure waste discharge requirements for TerraGen, solar energy generating facility, which is SEGS, S-E-G-S in the acronym, of phases 8 and 9. The Water Board will hold a public hearing to receive comments and consider adopting the proposed closure and post-closure waste discharge requirements for TerraGen solar energy generating systems, 8 and 9. The hearing will begin with a presentation from our Water Board staff, and next after that we will hear any comments from the public. All people who wish to comment in this hearing remotely should already be in the Zoom meeting room. If you have not registered or submitted an orange speaker card, you are requested to do so now. All people who expect to testify, please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth? If so, answer, I do. When it's your turn to speak, please state your name and affiliation and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. So I think the presentation is from Todd Batty, and I think that's where we are. I'll call for the staff presentation. There you are, Todd. Come on up.
Todd, hit the button on the... Yeah.
Can you hear me? There we go. Okay, good morning, board members and members of the public. My name is Todd Batty, and I'm an engineer and geologist with the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. I'm here to discuss the closure and post-closure waste discharge requirements for TerraGen's Solar Energy Generating Systems, or SEGS, 8 and 9 facilities, including three surface impoundments, one land treatment unit, and the SEGS 10 landfill in San Bernardino County. Next slide, please. We'll run through the topics of my discussion here. We'll talk about the site, or we'll look at the site vicinity map, and then move on to a facilities map. We'll cover the site history, the reason for the action, and discuss the closure of the SEGS 8 and 9 facilities. Also, the detection monitoring network map, the proposed alternative landfill closure system. We'll cover our public outreach efforts and the feedback we receive from the public, and then we'll move on to our recommendation. Next slide, please. The site vicinity map here shows that the facility is located in the western portion of the Mojave Desert near Harper Dry Lake in San Bernardino County. Harper Dry Lake is the white lake bed visible near the center of this aerial photo. The SEGS 8 and 9 facilities are located just west of the dry lake. For reference, Kramer Junction is located about 10 miles to the west. You can see where Highway 395 crosses the east-west Highway 58 there. Hinckley is about 10 miles to the southeast, and Barstow, where we're located, is about 20 miles to the southeast. Next slide. The facility map here shows SEGS 8, 9, and SEGS 9. Well, let's go through them one by one. SEGS 8 is shown here as the square area where the solar panels are currently located to the left of the red rectangle. SEGS 9 is located to the right of that red rectangle. The former land treatment unit is located within that red rectangle. And then we've got the surface impoundments shown with the blue crosshatched areas, including the west surface impoundment, east surface impoundment, north surface impoundment. Other solar facilities are located to the north and south. You can see the Lockhart Solar Facility outlined in yellow to the north and the Abengoa Mojave Solar Project located to the south. And you can also see on this aerial photo the Harper Dry Lake off there to the east or to the right. Next slide. Covering the site history, in 1989 and 1990, SEGS 8 and 9, respectively, began operating as concentrating solar thermal energy generating facilities. In 1995, the board adopted orders number 695-3 and 695-4 to establish new waste discharge requirements for solar energy generating systems 8 and 9, respectively. In 1998, the board adopted order number 698-74, which revised the waste discharge requirements for SEGS 8 and 9 and the land treatment units to combine the requirements of those two facilities and to rescind the two previous board orders. In 2019, the discharger, TerraGen LLC, obtained a conditional use permit from the County of San Bernardino to convert the facility from the older solar technology to photovoltaic panels, or PV panels, which do not generate operational wastewater or use heat transfer fluid. Heat transfer fluid is a petroleum product. In 2026, TerraGen submitted a final closure and post-closure maintenance plan. Next slide. I've got some photos mixed in here just to break up the PowerPoint content. You can see the photovoltaic panels that we've been discussing in the background and a new above-ground groundwater monitoring well with an above-ground completion. This is one of the wells that will be used in the post-closure monitoring program. Next slide. So the reasons for the action. Changes to the SEGS 8 and 9 facilities warrant new waste discharge requirements, which propose to do the following. Establish the closure and post-closure maintenance and monitoring period and requirements. Incorporate facility-specific monitoring, stormwater management, and reporting requirements. Provide a revised monitoring and reporting program. And provide other general updates based on the revised facility conditions. Next slide, please. The order approves the final closure and post-closure maintenance plan that proposes clean closure of the land treatment unit and two of the three surface impoundments. And those two that will be closed are the lower two, the west and the east impoundments that are called out on this slide. The third surface impoundment, the north one, will be converted into a landfill. The proposed landfill is named the SEGS 9 landfill. And the land treatment unit has already been closed, and these WDRs will formalize the closure of that facility. Next slide, please. Here you can see the detection monitoring network that includes groundwater monitoring wells shown in blue, the blue circles. Also, neutron probe wells that are shown with the black and yellow squares. That includes two vertical neutron probe wells and one horizontal neutron probe well. And also the leachate collection and recovery system sumps are called out here as well with the LCRS sump label. The depth of groundwater is about 55 feet below grade in this area. Next slide, please. These photos are from the installation of groundwater monitoring wells that will be used to monitor the closed landfill. On the left, a rotosonic drill rig set up on monitoring well 16. In the upper right, we see some soil chip samples that were collected during the drilling. You can get a general sense for the type of soil or the lithology from looking at the color here. The lighter soils are relatively sandy, the kind of tan-colored samples, and then you can see it transitions into darker samples, which are clay. Those chips are at 5-foot intervals, so they, in the upper left corner, we've got 5, and then 5, 10, 15, 20, et cetera, all the way down to 60 feet for the left sample tray there, and the other one is just from another well. It shows a similar pattern where the soil type basically shifts from sand into clay as those wells were, you know, drilled down and encountered those different soil types. The lower right photo shows bagged soil cores from the rotosonic drilling. That's one advantage of this type of drilling, is it provides complete coring instead of just specific intervals, and those samples come out and are basically vibrated out with this technology, and they go right into those bags where they can be studied further. Next slide, please. Here we see some more photos of the monitoring network. On the left, you can see the entrance to one of the horizontal neutron access wells. So that basically is a pipe that leads underneath the former wastewater, or the former pond there, allowing a neutron probe to be pulled underneath to see if any liquids have leaked out through the liner system there. You can also see the salt crust covering that surface impoundment because of the evaporation that occurs. They're concentrating the inorganic constituents in that surface impoundment. And you can see the staff there sticking up out in the middle of the pond, which is used to measure the depth of the liquid or accumulated evaporated materials. In the upper right photo, we see a leachate collection recovery system sump. So the recovery system is designed so that any liquids that leak underneath the landfill, or the surface impoundment, pardon me, are two liners, and in between there is sand, and that's all designed to drain over into the area of this sump so that you can easily check to see if anything has leaked through the first liner underneath the impoundment. Basically, just open up that vault, you see liquids, then there's evidence of leakage. The lower right corner shows a flush mount wellhead. This actually happens to be a lysimeter, but sometimes we use the same type of surface completion for groundwater monitoring wells. Next slide. So here is the engineered landfill closure system proposed for the SEGS 10 landfill. A 1 foot thick low hydraulic, I skipped ahead there. So Title 27 includes prescriptive standards for waste management unit construction and allows for engineered alternatives to those prescriptive standards. A proposed landfill closure system is being proposed in this case, primarily the cap on top of the landfill. Instead of using the typical 1 foot thick low hydraulic conductivity layer, the cap will include a thicker 2.5 foot thick evapotranspirative layer, which you can see called out at that kind of square cross-hatched pattern on top there for the cap. Our hydraulic modeling reveals that this will be protective of water quality, even though it doesn't contain the very low hydraulic conductivity layer. It will take advantage of evapotranspiration, and a critical part of that is getting native vegetation established on top of the installed cover to help with preventing water from infiltrating down into the landfill. Next slide, please. So a quick summary of the public outreach efforts. The tentative order was posted on the Water Board's website and distributed for public review and comment on April 27, 2026. The tentative order was also posted to the Mojave Desert News website, which is one of the local papers. And comments from the public and other stakeholders were due on May 27, 2026. Next slide. So regarding the feedback we received from the public, the discharger, TerraGen LLC, provided proposed editorial changes in a PDF file with tracked changes within the comment period. Recommended Cultural Resources Best Management Practices, or BMPs, were provided after the comment period by a representative of the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians. The discharger agreed to the recommended best management practices, so no changes were required to the waste discharge requirements. And Chairman Lux did accept the late input in this case. Further details of responses to the discharger and the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians is provided in Enclosure 2, which is Bates number 5-69 in your packet, if you want to refer to that. So our recommendation, Water Board staff recommend adoption of the closure and post-closure waste discharge requirements for TerraGen SEGS 8 and 9, 3 surface impoundments, 1 land treatment unit, and SEGS 9 landfill. Next slide. Next slide, please. Thank you. So that concludes the presentation. I'll leave you with this photo of battery storage units stretching off into the distance. And now I'll turn it back to Chair Lux. Thank you.
Lovely battery storage photo. Thank you. Thanks, Todd, for that presentation. Really thorough, and also a really a very, very thorough report. I appreciate it, and appreciate all your hard work. Before we go to public comment, of which I'm not sure there are any, but let's see if there's any technical questions for Todd while he's there, and then we'll get some public comment and additional questions and comments. Board Member Cox, go for it.
Yes, thank you. Todd, could you describe, I mean, we state that it has to be a evapotranspirative layer. What type of materials are acceptable for that type of layer?
Yeah, they've already identified a borrow area for that. The cap, I believe it's primarily silty sand. Again, we're not relying on extremely low hydraulic conductivity as much as the evapotranspirative properties that we'll achieve with the native vegetation that will be established there. The other thing to consider about this design is, so the liner system, we're going to use what's already there, what's been used for the previous surface impoundment, the north surface impoundment. And that design, you know, of the surface impoundment was used to contain liquids, obviously. The new landfill will basically be dry materials, so there's much less potential for liquids to basically have to manage liquids in general.
Good, thank you.
Sure.
And then what will Lahontan's involvement be in this moving forward? Will this transfer to... our disposal unit that oversees the landfills, or how will your team continue to oversee this?
Yeah, as far as I know, my team will continue to manage it, and all the post-closure documentation that will be submitted, we'll be reviewing that and making sure the vegetation is established appropriately on top and those sorts of things.
Good, and I appreciated the economic evaluation in this, that rather than requiring them to truck it 400 miles off-site, we came up with this option, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does make sense, and this is not a new pathway. We've done this with a couple other similar conversions of solar facilities that went from the thermal technology to photovoltaics. So, we've gone down this path before, and we'll continue to learn from that and manage it appropriately and save the money. Yeah, in addition to the economics, there's the environmental advantages of not having all those trucks driving around, generating greenhouse gases, traffic, et cetera. So
yeah,
I think
excellent.
It does make sense.
Appreciate it. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Board Member Pierce?
No questions, but thanks for the great presentation.
Board Member Alonzo?
No questions. Thank you.
Board Member Deaver?
No questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
I've got, Dodd, I've got just a couple real easy ones on there, quick ones. Just curiosity, what do you know what some of the native vegetation, what's going to grow on that thing, I guess is the vernacular way of saying it.
I don't know the details of that. I assume it'd be primarily creosote and typical desert scrub that we see out there.
Does it have the potential for taking up any contaminants? In other words, the vegetation, either for positive or potentially we have to then do something with the vegetation? Or
well, vegetation can do that, but this is on top of the waste.
Right.
So there's some separation there. So I would not expect it to draw, for any of that to be tied up in the biomass of the plants.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I'm just curious. And then I kind of asked you this in our pre-discussions, but any thoughts about, why the switch from the thermal technology to the photovoltaic? Because back X number of years ago, both technologies were available.
Right.
Is that more just the economics of solar and solar panels these days, or has something to do with the waste discharge issues and all the technologies there? I mean, I was kind of curious as to whether essentially my curiosity is, does the disposal needs and the cleanup needs actually add enough costs to make a difference there, or is it more just the technology of solar? I mean, the economics of solar.
Yeah, like we talked about, I can't really speak for the motivation behind it in terms of the discharger. I assume it does have an economic basis. But from our perspective, it does have the advantages because the old technology generated wastewater that had to be managed. It also involved the heat transfer fluid, which was prone to be, you know, spills, and then they had to basically gather up the heat transfer fluid impacted soil into the land treatment unit, do biotreatment, all those headaches. So now with the photovoltaic technology, we don't have those waste streams to manage or for us to oversee, I should say, the management of them. And the other thing to consider is there's no water usage involved with the PV panels, so that's good in terms of, you know, not using our precious groundwater resources. So yep. It's a lot of advantages environmentally from our perspective. What the ultimate motivation was, we can only speculate, really.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's a much easier technology to address, much simpler technology. It's just a completely different technology. I mean, it's a kind of a night and day technology. It's not just one kind of solar panel for another. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, it is. And like I mentioned, this is other solar facilities have gone through this transition. I think we only have one solar facility left that uses the older thermal technology, Mojave Solar Project. So yeah, it's a common trend in the industry to shift.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks sure. so much. Any other ones before? Any public comment cards or speakers online or anything?
No public speaker cards, but we have three on Zoom.
Okay. Are they ready to go? We're ready to have them.
They're ready. Julie, you can Welcome. Unmute. Julie, did you wish to speak on this item? Next, we have Gregory. Go ahead, Julie.
Julie, you just... There you go. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say, we were only here to, Gregory, Juan, and I were only here to address any questions if necessary. So we don't need to speak.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So Julie just indicated that her and Gregory are only here for questions. So Juan, you can unmute. Juan, do you wish to speak on this item? Chair Lux, I'm not hearing anybody on Zoom wishing to speak.
Okay, thanks, Ariel. If while we're in discussion, if it goes that if they pop in, we'll go ahead and entertain it. Okay, board discussion, comments, questions, anything? I'll look for you guys to. No, seeing a lot of head shaking. No. All right. Give one last chance to our remote speakers. No. All right. I'll look for a motion.
I'll move approval of the item.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Ariel, please do roll call.
Member Dr. Cox?
Aye.
Member Deaver?
Aye.
Member Alonzo?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dr. Pierce?
Aye.
Chair Dr. Lux?
Aye. And again, thanks, Todd, and to all your staff members who helped you with that. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. I think we can maybe move one more item and then do a break. What do you guys think? You guys okay? Okay. All right. So it is just about 9:40, and we're on to item 6. And this is an update on the racial equity update, and we have an updated presentation coming up. Thank you very much. Here we go. I appreciate you guys being here, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay. Just making sure it works. Okay. Good morning, Chair Lux, members of the board, and meeting attendees. On behalf of the Lahontan Region Racial Equity Working Group, my name is Eli Balderas. I'm an environmental scientist in the Planning and Assessment Unit. I'm also joined here today by Melina Hov in the Department of Defense and Site Cleanup Unit. So today we will be presenting an update on the racial equity and environmental justice work completed since the last racial equity board update back in August 2025 in South Lake Tahoe, if you recall. This is an informational item, and while no board action is required, we appreciate any feedback and suggestions for future activities. So next slide, please. And before I share a brief outline of today's presentation, I wanted to reintroduce the current Lahontan Region Racial Equity Working Group. So group participation is open to all staff, and the group changes depending on staff availability. Together, we are committed to ensuring that every Californian in the Lahontan region enjoys equitable protection from environmental harm. And we're striving to accomplish this by better understanding the needs of communities within the region, providing equitable access to resources and services, confronting barriers to progress, and incorporating diverse perspectives into our programs and policies to ensure that our work addresses environmental injustices and equitably benefits everyone. It's also important to mention that the efforts I'm going to highlight later in this presentation encompass work done by all staff in the Lahontan region, not just this core working group here. And without everyone's contributions, we would not be able to achieve our racial equity goals. So next slide, please. Okay, today's presentation will include an overview of the racial equity-centered activities over the past year, including outreach and regional successes, and an update on the status of the Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan. As part of our outreach efforts this past year, we have visited community centers, schools, and businesses to display the initial draft Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan. And the photo on this slide shows copies of the plans displayed at the Tri-County Fairgrounds in Bishop, California. Next slide, please. So it was a really great team effort in distributing flyers and information about the initial draft Racial Equity Action Plan to locations all over the region, and this included both in-person and electronic copies. Through our outreach efforts, we were able to drop off flyers and copies of the action plans in both Spanish and English to 34 locations and distribute 50 electronic copies via email and newsletter. We targeted locations like visitor centers, city offices, coffee shops, and other community centers. And the photo on this slide shows the flyers displayed at the new League to Save Lake Tahoe Visitor Center in South Lake Tahoe. Next slide, please. Staff have also been able to attend several in-person outreach events recently. In April of this year, the Bishop Paiute Tribe held their Earth Day and Spring Market at the Owens Valley Paiute Shoshone Cultural Center. Staff members Anna Garcia and Lorian Sanders, shown in the picture on this slide, were able to host a booth where they provided information on the Lahontan Water Board's role in protecting water quality, identifying and reporting harmful algal blooms, or HABs, as well as our Racial Equity Action Plan. In May, the Washoe Environmental Protection Department held their annual Earth Day event in Carson City, and that was attended by myself and Danny McClure, who's our regional tribal coordinator. We also had, at our booth, we had Water Board's informational material, HABs brochures and coloring books, and information on our racial equity work. And then we also displayed an interactive watershed model to show how water moves across landscapes and how to prevent pollutants from entering surface waters. And that's always a popular activity with the kids, so got some attention. If you're interested in hearing more about these events, there's an Associated Executive Officers Report article that was released in the May EO report. And I'll just say overall, we had a really great time at these events, connecting with members of these communities, and we look forward to continuing to participate in these events every year. Next slide, please. Over the past year or so, we have had quite a few successes that demonstrate some of the ongoing work staff are already doing that has a nexus to racial equity and environmental justice. And then with the implementation of our Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan, the hope is that this work will be accelerated even further. And we wanted to highlight some of these successes without going into too much detail. However, more information can be found in the board packet on Bates Stamps 6-2 through 6-3. One success that I'll start with is the renaming of Washishu Creek, which is shown in the photo on this slide. The creek's new name comes from the Washoe word for people. This name change was actually part of a larger effort by the Department of Interior to remove historically offensive slurs from the names of geographic features. Washishu Creek, which was previously listed on the Clean Water Act Section 303D list, also had an associated total maximum daily load, or TMDL, due to sediment impairment. So to reflect this name change, our TMDL website and other water board documents were updated earlier this year. An associated EO article is available for this work in the January EO report, if you're interested in reading more about that. Another success I want to highlight is Washoe Tribe coordination that is ongoing in multiple units through the water board, throughout the water board, including coordination with our regional monitoring coordinator to help monitor water quality at Meeks Creek, and as well as efforts by Leviathan Mine staff to help advance remediation strategies that address water quality concerns and tribal priorities. Next slide, please. So focusing on the Mono watershed, a new project just started there to conduct a screening level assessment of water and sediment quality in Bear Track Creek to determine whether historic mining activities are contributing metals contamination that could impact the aquatic habitat, tribal cultural uses, and potential human exposure pathways. Monitoring began on an April 28th site visit, which is shown in this photo here. It's a photo of Bear Track Creek. And this project occurs on the Mono Lake Kitsetika Tribe's newly acquired property, Tupai Nobe, and will address the tribe's concerns about water quality and safety, and will also provide data in support of tribal beneficial use designation in the Mono Basin. Moving on, there have also been a number of supplemental environmental projects, or SEPs, that have recently been settled, which will result in environmental improvement projects in disadvantaged or severely disadvantaged communities in our region. And so these include a recent SEP to install restroom and drinking water facilities near Sekline Beach in North Lake Tahoe, and another SEP that funded the excavation of a water quality basin at Barton Avenue and 4th Street in South Lake Tahoe. Next slide, please. And then focusing back in on harmful algal blooms, or HABs, earlier this year, Sabrina Rice, our regional freshwater HAB coordinator, led a training with the Bishop Paiute in water bodies of concern to the tribe. Sabrina also participated in a training series led by State Board Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program staff that was designed for tribes to support development of HAB monitoring and data analysis programs. This training was attended by several tribes in our region, and Sabrina was able to participate in the first session of the training series to introduce the Lahontan Water Board and offer funding opportunities for HAB monitoring. Over the past year or so, we've also participated in quite a few student-centered outreach efforts. Water Board staff regularly provide water quality lessons to students around Lake Tahoe as part of the Wonders of Water and Environmental Education program. Staff in the Victorville office, like Christina Guerra, who's shown in this picture here, have also gone directly to schools participating in career fairs and providing lessons in the classroom on water quality issues and how to pursue a career with the Water Board. So without an action plan, we've still been able to accomplish quite a bit towards achieving the goals of our racial equity resolution. But the hope is, again, that with our racial equity and environmental justice action plan, we'll be able to concentrate these efforts and go beyond what we're already doing to achieve our fifth regional goal of incorporating racial equity into water quality decisions and regulatory actions. So now I'll pass it off to Melina to talk about where we're at with this effort, the timeline, and the next steps. Thank you.
Thanks, Eli. Hi, I'm Melina Hov. I'm an engineering geologist out of the Department of Defense Site Cleanup Unit, and today I'll be providing an update on the Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan. So next slide, please. So the Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan is available in the board agenda package on Bait Stamp 6-7. This portion of the presentation will summarize what the action plan is, how the action plan was developed, and our future goals for the Racial Equity Working Group. The action plan outlines our region-specific commitments to incorporating racial equity and environmental justice in our water quality decisions and regulatory actions. Part of the action plan includes commitment from the Racial Equity Working Group to provide annual updates to the board on the status and progress of the action plan commitments. This will be in the form of either an executive officer's report or a board presentation. The action plan itself is intended to be a living document. This document will not require board approval, but we do encourage any input during our annual updates to the board. We also plan on continuously taking input from the public throughout our outreach and action plan implementation and editing the document as needed. Next slide, please. So, here I go. Okay. Perfect. Okay. The action plan consists of 4 action plan commitments: water quality protection, community engagement, racial equity and environmental justice training, and workforce diversity. These 4 action plan commitments were developed from both internal and external feedback. Under each action plan commitment listed on the slide here, we have outlined specific staff actions and goals related to that overarching commitment. Many of the actions listed in the plan will require multi-year processes, while some are ongoing. In the next slide, I'll walk you through an example of a section from the action plan. Next slide, please. So this table here is from the Commitments to Water Quality Protection section of the action plan. This slide is meant to be more of an example of the action plan format, and in the next slide, we'll take a closer look at one of the action items from this table. So for each action plan commitment, we have listed which items from our region's adopted racial equity resolution the commitments relate to. For example, this action plan commitment relates to numbers 6, 7, 9, 10, and 11. So each action plan commitment consists of our actions listed in a table format, and this table includes the action and the associated performance indicators or metrics that will be used to track the progress throughout the year. Actions are related to different racial equity and environmental justice work that we commit to implementing in the future as a region. Next slide, please. So looking closer here at one of the actions as an example, and it highlights the action and the associated performance indicator. So the listed action is to work with local communities to identify and compile water quality data gaps in tribal and environmental justice communities. And this directly relates to water quality protection because the work effort would result in addressing water quality data gaps in tribal and environmental justice communities. And the associated performance indicator is the creation of a data needs list. So this would be a list of all the compiled data quality gaps. So creating a tracking system for these actions and performance indicators in all of the different sections will be one of the large tasks that the Racial Equity Working Group will be working on towards following the finalization of the action plan. Next slide, please. So the past few slides kind of summarize the general format and the content of the action plan. The next slide summarizes the efforts completed to develop the plan and then the future work. So the Racial Equity Working Group started developing the initial draft action plan in fall of 2024. An initial development of this action plan incorporated input from staff gathered during an all-staff brainstorming session, as well as referencing other regional board action plans as well and state action plans. So at our last board update in August 2025, the initial draft action plan was still in the public comment period. And as Eli mentioned earlier, we have completed outreach via public events, emails to distribute the initial draft action plan to various communities in our region. And so we received public input via an online survey, and this feedback was incorporated into our draft action plan. And some of the feedback included the creation of community liaison positions and the acknowledgement of tribal history. And this table illustrates that change made in the action plan as a result of those comments that we had received on that survey. And so under the community or the commitments to community engagement, we added that action to work on developing some sort of liaison position for as a resource for environmental justice communities. And again, that'll be something that the Racial Equity Working Group will work on figuring out how we're going to handle that and do that in the future. So next slide, please. So after incorporation of edits into the draft action plan, the new version of the action plan was posted for a 30-day comment period from May to June 2026. We had received one anonymous survey response to the draft action plan survey, and this response included multiple comments on concerns about the language presented in our already adopted racial equity resolution. To assist with handling those comments, the regional board staff consulted with the State Water Resources Control Board, Office of Public Engagement, Equity and Tribal Affairs, or OPETA, for guidance on how to address the comments in the survey response. And OPETA staff recommended noting the comments, but the comments did not warrant a change in our adopted racial equity resolution. Since the comments pertain to the adopted resolution, the Racial Equity Working Group does not plan on making any changes to the resolution. We plan on taking these comments into consideration for our next version of the action plan. Next slide, please. So this is a timeline of our progress to date on the Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan. As summarized in the last few slides, from November 2025 to May 2026, we focus efforts on revisions to the initial draft action plan based on public feedback. And from there, we had posted a draft action plan for public comment period. Currently, we are working towards finalizing the action plan. Throughout this whole process, we have also committed to conducting public outreach. Next slide, please. Our presentation has summarized the great outreach work and successes completed by the Racial Equity Working Group and staff region-wide thus far. The next steps for the Racial Equity Working Group includes finalizing that Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan, implementing the action plan, creating an internal tracker for the action plan commitments, including tracking the performance indicators outlined in the action plan, and developing Racial Equity Working Group goals for the future. Next slide, please. Thank you. The Racial Equity Working Group has achieved great milestones, including outreach, adoption of our racial equity resolution in 2024, and now finalization of our Racial Equity and Environmental Justice Action Plan. A lot of this work would not have been possible without the efforts and commitment from staff and support from management and the board on behalf of the Racial Equity Working Group. Thank you. That concludes our presentation.
Thanks so much for the presentation, the hard work, and thanks to the whole Lawton Region Racial Equity Working Group. I see 14 friendly faces here. I won't read the names, but thank you to all of you for this this great work and the update. Before I go to board member questions and comments, do we have any public comment or cards or online speakers for this one?
We do not.
We do not. Okay. Well, I'm going to look to my right this time, and Board Member Devers, you get so no one can steal your question this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have many, so when they're stolen.
Yeah.
I wanted to just comment on outreach. In my previous employment, they did none, County of San Bernardino, and I think when you go out, it shows a commitment, you know, just a piece of paper, it goes on a shelf, but when you go out and speak with them and interact with people, it really, really helps your cause. So good job on that.
Thank you.
Board Member Alonzo.
I just want to comment that also in my previous work that I found that engaging with young people, students, goes a long way to educating their parents as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Definitely.
Board Member Pierce.
Yes, thanks. Great presentation and your work.
Thank you. Board Member Cox.
No questions. Thank you both.
Just a couple from me. First, echo both the comments of my colleagues to my right on that one. And I really appreciate you going to those events and involving multiple staff members. I mean, I think it's great that everybody gets a piece of this and gets a chance to get out there and do something that's really good. The other thing I wanted to kind of highlight were the successes. You know, plans like these and kind of working groups like these can sometimes be a little seem a little vague. And it's like, well, what? Those interesting words. That sounds great. What are you doing? To me, what you showed us, and I know you just showed us some examples. There's plenty more. They were tangible. They were detailed. And they had significant benefit. The SEPs, the student learning, you know, going out to the schools, the testing project near Mono on, you know, Bear Track Creek. Those are real tangible things in the environment that and with people that they see and appreciate. So, I think that's great because it can be a project like this. I'm an old planner from way back, and planning projects, long-term planning projects, can sometimes seem like, it's just a bunch of words, and paper, as you say. And you guys are showing some real, real tangible success. So thanks. Keep it up. All right. Any other board member comments, questions? Ben? All right. Okay, it is 10. I'm going to recommend a short bio break or break. I see 10 fingers going up, so 10 minutes. All right, so 10, we'll come back. All right, the Water Board, Lawton Regional Water Board is back in session. Thank you for everybody for sticking around and coming back. We are on to item 7, which is a status report on cleanup activities concerning chromium contamination from Pacific Gas and Electric PG&E's Hinkley Compressor Station, and we get these quite frequently or periodically when we come down to Barstow and Victorville. And Amanda Lopez, I believe, is going to do our staff presentation, and we appreciate that and the report, and take it away.
Okay, can you hear me? My last presentation for this item, the person that's presenting is actually not here yet, so hopefully they will get here before I finish my presentation and PG&E finishes theirs. So good morning, Chair Lux, board members, and members of the public. My name is Amanda Lopez, and I'm an engineering geologist in your Victorville office. I'm here today to present the annual status report on activities concerning chromium contamination from Pacific Gas and Electric Companies, or PG&E's, Hinkley Compressor Station. This presentation will summarize the key activities performed by Water Board staff over the past year. Following my presentation, we'll hear from Mr. John Glass with PG&E. He will provide a status update on work performed by PG&E over the past year. Following PG&E's presentation, the IRP, or Independent Review Panel IRP, Manager Dr. Riddell Sanchez will provide an update on the outreach and technical advisory services provided to the Hinkley community by the IRP. Oh, I wasn't doing slides. So we're on slide 3 now. I didn't want you to see my slides. They're not done yet. Okay, slide 3. My presentation will cover the following topics: the cleanup goals required by the Cleanup and Abatement Order, or the CAO, the investigative order requiring PG&E to submit a feasibility study, an updated CAO revision timeline, and a new collaboration between the County of San Bernardino and Water Board staff regarding new domestic well installations in Hinkley. Next slide. So 2025 marked a significant milestone for the PG&E Hinkley Chromium Cleanup Project. Under the Cleanup and Abatement Order, PG&E is required to meet two cleanup goals. The first cleanup goal is to reach and maintain 50 parts per billion hexavalent and total chromium in 90% of the wells exceeding 50 parts per billion hexavalent and total chromium as of November 4th, 2015. This was to be completed by December 31st, 2025, as reported in the fourth quarter 2025 groundwater monitoring report. The second cleanup goal is to reach and maintain 10 parts per billion hexavalent and total chromium in 80% of the wells exceeding 10 parts per billion hexavalent and total chromium as defined on November 4th, 2015. The second cleanup goal is to be completed by December 31st, 2032. As reported in the fourth quarter 2032 groundwater monitoring report. As of fourth quarter 2025, PG&E has met both of the cleanup goals. So good job to PG&E and their work on remediation. The 50 and 10 parts per billion were selected based on the regulatory limits at the time the order was issued. So next slide. And this slide is to provide a reference of the plume at the time the order was issued, the fourth quarter 2015 plume, and the fourth quarter 2025 plume. The 50 parts per billion line is represented as a blue, darker blue line. The 10 parts per billion is a light blue line on the maps. And 2015 is the left map, 2025 is the right map. PG&E will go into more detail in their presentation on reaching these milestones. Next slide. Next, I would like to revisit PG&E's hexavalent chromium background value evaluation, leading to water board staff drafting and issuing an investigative order requiring PG&E to submit a feasibility study. I'll start with a quick recap on the main findings of the United States Geological Survey, or USGS, background study. The USGS background study identified six background concentrations based on subareas shown by different colors on the map. So on the map, there's the different colors, different subareas, different background values. PG&E's plume primarily lies within the 2.8 parts per billion background subarea, with a small portion extending into the 4.8 parts per billion subarea in the north. It also identified 3.8 parts per billion as the site-wide background average calculated concentration using the eastern, western, and the northern subarea upgradient from the Mount General Fault. The yellow line on the map represents what is called the summative scale plume extent. This outline is not a concentration, rather represents the extent where the USGS background study determined the presence of anthropogenic hexavalent chromium. Next slide. This slide gives a closer look at the subareas identified in the USGS background study and compares the hexavalent chromium boundaries to the summative scale plume boundary. The red line represents a 3.1 parts per billion plume contour from the 2015 when the CAO was issued. The blue line shows second quarter 20, what is it? The blue line is a second quarter 2026 3.1 parts per billion plume contour, and the yellow line again is the summative scale plume extent. Next slide. On February 20th, 2024, Water Board staff sent a letter requesting that PG&E submit a proposal evaluating background values from the USGS background study as cleanup levels. In the 2015 CAO, the cleanup levels were established as interim maximum background concentrations to distinguish the 3.1 parts per billion from other values that may be adopted at a later date on the results from the USGS background study. Next slide. In response to the Water Board's February 2024 request, PG&E submitted the hexavalent chromium background value evaluation on May 15, 2024. The evaluation included discussion and summary of values from the USGS background study, a recommended cleanup level, plume contouring, and domestic well protection. PG&E proposed 9 parts per billion as the cleanup level protective of the beneficial use of the water as drinking water. In the USGS background study, the background value for the area north of the Mount General Fault, where the hexavalent chromium was determined to be naturally occurring, is 9 parts per billion. In its evaluation, PG&E proposed this value be selected as the cleanup level for the entire site. Next slide. Water Board staff reviewed PG&E's background value evaluation and determined that more information was needed to develop a cleanup level and cleanup timeframe. Comments from the public in the IRP were focused on the lack of justification for the selected 9 parts per billion, that the proposed 9 parts per billion did not reflect the results of the USGS background study. Throughout 2025, Water Board staff and PG&E held discussions to determine what information is needed in a feasibility study to establish timeframes and a cleanup level. These discussions included consideration of preliminary modeling results. Next slide. After determining what information is needed from the feasibility study, Water Board staff drafted an investigative order that outlined 13 key requirements. I would like to highlight a few of them, each of which must be evaluated for 3 cleanup strategies, including a no-action scenario. The order calls for an evaluation of several potential cleanup levels for hexavalent chromium, specifically chromium concentrations of 2.8, 3.1, 3.8, 4.8, 5.8, and 10 parts per billion. An evaluation of expected timeframes to achieve cleanup to 90%, 95%, and 99% mass reduction and aerial plume footprint reduction, in an evaluation of whether achieving lower contaminant levels provides benefit that justifies the additional costs. The information provided in the feasibility study will be important in determining appropriate cleanup targets and milestones. Next slide. The draft investigative order was released for a 30-day public comment period on May 26th and closed on June 26th of this year. The Water Board received 3 comment letters, one from PG&E, one from the IRP, and one from a member of the community. Comment letters received did not lead to any changes to the draft order. The investigative order was issued on July 28, 2026. The feasibility study will be due to the Water Board on July 28, 2027, 1 year after the issuance of the order. Next slide. As discussed in previous board meetings, the CAO will be revised to establish final cleanup levels for hexavalent chromium. The investigative order requiring the feasibility study was issued to PG&E and is expected to take about a year to complete. Water Board staff will review the feasibility study after it is received. After staff review the feasibility study, a revised CAO will be drafted, then released for public comment and review, and ultimately brought before the board for consideration. PG&E will continue remediation with the 3.1 parts per billion interim cleanup level that was established in the 2015 CAO. While the CAO is being revised, PG&E will still be required to take steps to remediate the site. PG&E has remained in compliance with their orders over the past year and continues to remediate and make progress toward established remedial targets. Next slide. Now I'd like to discuss a new process that was established this past year through collaboration between the County of San Bernardino and Water Board staff. Residents in Hinckley rely on domestic wells for their household water supplies. And these domestic wells are permitted by the county when they are to be drilled. Historically, Water Board staff have not been involved in that permitting process. However, recent domestic wells have been installed closer to the hexavalent chromium plume boundary. This raised concern that if a well is not properly constructed, it could risk contaminating the unaffected areas of the upper aquifer as well as the lower aquifer. To address this, the county and Water Board staff met and developed a new process that allows Water Board staff to review the construction details for new domestic wells planned within a designated zone around the plume boundary. This collaboration represents an important step forward in protecting domestic wells, safeguarding the upper and lower aquifers, and strengthening coordination between the two agencies. Next slide. This concludes my presentation. Again, PG&E's Mr. John Glass will be next with PG&E's update, and then the IRP manager, Dr. Raldell Sanchez, will provide his update. Next slide, I guess, or I don't know. It was the end slide. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Perhaps while you're here, if there are any technical or clarifying questions from board members, might be a good time. Then we'll move on to Mr. Glass. Board members, any? Just one quick one for me.
Sure.
On slide 7, and I don't think you even need to get it back up, but I noticed that, I think I remembered this from last time, it appears that the 2026 plume has actually kind of expanded out a little bubble to the, everything is smaller except one place to the east there, it appears, mm-hmm. a little bubble out. Can you just refresh my memory as to why that occurred?
It just happens as part of the process of the remediation. PG&E is doing extraction, injection. So it just kind of represents, and obviously my lines on there are like 3 miles wide, but okay, not that much, but it kind of shifts around as they're doing their cleanup. So
because they're injecting some materials and extracting some.
Yeah. Okay. So it kind of influences it that way.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Mr. Glass from PG&E, is he here? I know some people are still en route. Oh, there he is. Okay, come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm going to give an update of our mediation efforts at the Hinkley Compression Station. Next slide, please. So our agenda, we're going to go over the remediation timeline, look at the infrastructure for those that are new board members, did a little brief overview of the system, and then we'll talk about the progress that's been made. Amanda already hit the highlights, the 2015 or 2025 goal of 50 ppb, 90%, it was met. We'll briefly cover that. We'll talk about the 2025 and 2026 activities that have been completed and are currently ongoing. And we'll talk a little bit about the community involvement and looking forward. Next slide, please. So this is a real high-level snapshot of the project timeline. 1987 was the first corrective cleanup and abatement order. And then the first remediation was the agricultural treatment units. That was started out in 1992. We had a few years of operation. Our operation was ceased. We were updating the permits for the agricultural treatment unit. Then restarted back in 2004. And in 2007, that's when the in-situ remediation system actually started operating. And in 2010, we had another cleanup and abatement order. This is where the remedy was actually selected through the feasibility study. And through that time period, we also had the USGS was also conducting the background study. And in mid-2023, the results were shared with the public. In that stage, since 2012, we've increased the remedial efforts by about 100% of what was originally designed and planned. We keep learning new things, adjusting the system, doing some adaptive management to contain and reduce the plume. And like Amanda said, the 2025 goal of getting 90% or below, or 90% or higher of the 50 ppb plume was achieved and is still maintained through the second quarter of 2026. Next slide, please. This is just a snapshot of some of the infrastructure you'll see or not see because most of it's underground. We have two ethanol tanks located on site. We have several miles of pipeline. I'll go into a little more detail there. And we have several extraction wells. I'll go through the numbers in a little bit. And that's what the in-situ equipment vault looks like. Basically, that's where we do the groundwater injections for the treatment. Next slide, please. So for the treatment, for the agriculture treatment units, we have 300 available acres. 100 of those acres are fallowed. We are currently using 200 of those acres. We have 71 extraction wells. Like I said, two ethanol tanks, one located in the central area IRZ, and one located on the station close to the ponds. We have 177 in-situ remediation wells. Those are the ones that we inject the ethanol. Approximately about 725 monitoring wells are on the project, and like 26 miles of pipeline are involved in this, and 14 miles of electrical conduit. I probably should have said this earlier. The green circles and squares on the figure to the left, those are the agricultural treatment units that are being referenced. Those are all 300 acres that are available to us. And it's really teeny tiny, but you can see triangles for the in-situ risk regulation wells, and the squares are the extraction wells. You may or may not notice, but the extraction wells, above Highway 58 is extraction only. Below Highway 58 is extraction and injection. Next slide, please. So as previous updates, we're showing a progress of the shallow zone in the upper aquifer. We started measuring in 2008. That's the baseline. And you see through third quarter 2017, it's been greatly reduced from there. And in first quarter of 2025, we've done a really good job of eating the plume from the inside and containing it from the outside and shrinking it as we go. Next slide, please. And this is the deep zone in the upper aquifer. Same deal. 2008 is the baseline. And you see an example midway at third quarter 2017. And then our where we were at first quarter 2025. You can see that it's been greatly reduced. A lot of progress, a lot of work. Next slide, please. Remediation progression, our progress, mass removal, looking at a mass removal. Again, looking at 1990 as a starting date, you'll see a nice reduction when we started the agricultural treatment units in 1992. A little bit of a stall while they were redoing the permits. Then continued cleanup as we go with the agricultural treatments and really get the really big drop when the in-situ remediation system started to be active. You will notice, you know, the steep declines. Then as we get closer to mid 2022, 2023, you can see the rate of mass removal has been reduced, slower. Most of that's, think of a sponge. When you first squeeze it, you get a lot of stuff out. When you try to squeeze it again, not much comes out, and this is where we're at. We're at the time period where we're at the hard stuff that's bound in the soils. So you'll see slower progression as we go. But we still are at 91% of mass removal from the 1990 baseline. Next slide, please. So in 2025, 2026, we have some upcoming projects and some projects that have been completed. I'll start from the south and work my way north. The Southern Star, we installed two extraction wells to enhance circulation and extraction in an area we've got concentrations over 1,000. We wanted to hit that source area in a little different way. That was completed in December. We turned it on December 2025. The two new projects go the north, the Star directly above that north. We're going to be installing an extraction well and two injection wells to make a mini recirculation loop to get that concentration of like 800 ppb so we can get enhanced treatment in that area. And the next project is actually going on now. That's the furthest northern Star. We're just adding two injection wells to our central area containment line just to get a little bit more robust remediation in that area. And those drills are actually, those wells are actually being drilled right now. So, next slide, please. So, community involvement this means a strong commitment to PG&E through hiring locally. Practicing sustainability and having community partnerships. Since we last met, PG&E's been supporting the community by giving a $10,000 charitable donation to the Hinckley Community Center. Again, we continue our partnerships with local farmers, especially our farming partners that farm our agricultural treatment units. We've been given educational tours through universities, schools, and industry. This past year, we've given a tour for the University of San Diego students that wanted to learn more about the project and what remediation is like, which I thought was very, very, very nice and cool. We've also had one community fair flu vaccination event, one community cleanup event, one community care and food distribution event, and in June, we had the community volunteer awards, and 9 community members were recognized for their voluntary activities. One of the things that I really like about this project is the workforce development program. Basically, it's a program where people can come in and get training to work in the in in the in, environmental field or in other industries. They get the availability to receive 6 professional certifications, ranging from a Hazwoper certification to a forklift certification. So we've had over 138 people go through the program, nearly 100% employment rate after graduation. I think it's great. There's actually some of the people that have graduated from this program are currently working on the site right now. So I think that's really, really great. Next slide. All right, looking forward, we're going to continue to operate under the mitigation measures in accordance with the permits and the EIR. I'll come back to that point. We'll complete the feasibility study, which Amanda just mentioned was received last week. We have a year to complete that feasibility study, July 27th, 2027. So looking forward to completing that and working to get this moving forward. So this was submitted about a month ago, so I just want to give an update to new data that was received from our July sampling. There's a domestic well that was installed in 2024, close to the or just west of the plume. When we first sampled it in 2024, it had an exceedance of hexavalent chromium above the 10 mcl. We've been supplying that particular resident with bottled water, drinking water. It's been non-detect for the last 24 sampling events because we sample it monthly. And last month we did get a detection of 13, which is above the 10 ppb mcl hexavalent chromium. We're continuing to monitor this area. There's some variability in that well. Like I said, we've had 24 results near non-detect or one, but there's some variability, and we're looking into this to see what's causing the variability. We've installed 2 well sets, 2 well clusters from between the plume and that well, just to see if it's the plume's been migrating, and there's been no indication that the plume's been migrating in that direction. So just wanted to give a little update. Like I said, this was turned in a month ago, new data. Just wanted to share it. Last slide. Just want to let this sit in for a little bit. Like I said, we made a lot of progress for the previous slide. Like I mentioned from my sponge analogy, we still have a long ways to go to get it cleaned up and close the books on it. So just wanted to. We've done a lot of progress. 91% is great. It's going to take a while to get that last 9% out. Yeah, I think I'm done.
All right. Thanks. Questions, kind of technical or other kinds of questions for Mr. Glass? Board members? No?
Okay. I got a real quick one.
Yep.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, it's really cool what's been done. What's the total bill since this thing started? Do you have a clue for that?
It's a lot.
No, I got that part. I was just curious if it's kept track over.
Yeah, I don't have a number for you, but it's a lot. Sorry.
Is that a number that perhaps the next time we hear, because we'll have another status report presumably in 6 months, or you might get that? I'm curious about that as well. And a lot is a good term, but it would be. I mean, it's because if this kind of situation arises again, it'd be good for us to have a feeling. Like, is this a $50 million operation, or a 100, or a 700? So something you might just kind of poke around with your colleagues and see if we can come up with an estimate. I really think it's an important question.
Yeah, I think feasibility study will have an economic evaluation on it, so that there'll be a component of that in the FS or the feasibility study. Sorry.
I think we have one more presentation, and I believe the presenters are here. This is the IRP manager's presentation. Yeah.
Yes, so it's the third presentation on item 7.
Thanks.
Welcome. Good afternoon, board. My name is Rodel Sanchez. I'm the IRP manager. The IRP manager was brought on board because, you know, back in 2012, you know, there was issues with trust and transparency with the community. We were all brought on board just to, you know, make sure that everything was transparent, that the community had an independent third party reviewing all of PG&E's reports. So next slide, please. So just to give you a summary of what the IRP manager does, like I mentioned, you know, we serve as the independent third technical party for the community. We review all the technical information from the water board and from PG&E. So, you know, we're... In accordance to the cleanup and abatement order, we're required to do these six specific tests that you see. So the first test that we do is we generate an annual report. This annual report contains, you know, all the comment letters that we prepare during the year that covers the review of all PG&E's technical documents. You know, any water board documents that they issue during the year, our newsletter, our presentation. The second thing that we do is, like, as you can see, here's an example. You know, it's, I have a few pictures on the presentation. We issue a newsletter out to the community, you know, just giving them updates on the water board, PG&E's groundwater remediation program, you know, community input, you know, some key dates about meetings, water board meetings. And the third item that we do is, you know, we host four community meetings in Hinckley, just to give people, the committee members, just updates of the status of PG&E groundwater remediation program. The fourth thing that we do is, you know, we have office hours 3 times a month. So if committee members or groups, they have questions regarding, like, their domestic well or just questions regarding PG&E's program, you know, we're available there to answer any of the questions. And the fifth test is, you know, it's most of the thing that we do. We review all the technical documents. We prepare presentations. We submit comment letters to the water board, you know, providing our input of anything that PG&E has issued. And then the last thing is, you know, the cleanup and abatement order does give us flexibility. So if we need a specific skill set, you know, the cleanup and abatement order provides us that skill set. If we need to bring just an example, like a toxicologist or someone to review, like the ERI, like that we did in the past, you know, we have that flexibility in accordance to the cleanup and abatement order. Next slide, please. So, you know, the way that we do our community outreach, we use three different mechanisms. And as I mentioned before, you know, we were brought on board back in 2012. You know, it took several years for us to get the trust of the community. So what we do out there, like I mentioned, you know, we go out there, we answer questions for the community. We make sure we answer the questions. And if we don't, you know, we'll follow up, make sure if they have any other additional questions. And as I mentioned, the second thing that we do is technical. So we review all the technical documents. You know, we prepare presentations, simple visuals so the community can understand, you know, these tech, you know, pretty complicated technical issues that are out there. And then the third thing is that, you know, we you know, physical, you know, we're out there, we have office hours, you know, we're there to answer any questions that the community has. You know, we have those four quarterly meetings that if community members have questions, we give them updates on anything regarding PG&E's groundwater remediation program. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned before, you know, we see ourselves as the eye of the community in which, you know, the water board and PG&E, they're interacting. They're sharing a significant amount of information. So, you know, what we do is, like I mentioned before, we review, we interpret the information, we present this complex information to the community in visuals, presentations, and we also have a website that we post, you know, our presentations, our comment letters that the community has access to review. And if they have any questions, you know, we're there to answer the their questions. So just a couple of numbers, you know, over the years that we've done, you know, we've done 76 community meetings, 6 community open houses, you know, we host annual barbecues, you know, we've done hundreds of office hours, we reviewed hundreds of technical reports. We've done, you know, over 27 community workshops, you know, and we've have over 500 hours of office hours. So we're there, you know, committee members have any questions regarding, you know, PG&E's program or the water board's cleanup and abatement orders, or they're we're there to answer it for the community. Next slide, please. So here's an example of, you know, task five, and you know, what we do is three examples of some of the comment letters that we issued to the water board. So the first, you know, the first example that I'm sharing with you is, you know, we issued a comment letter when Amanda and the water board issued the investigation order for the feasibility study on the background study. So we hosted a workshop. We got feedback from the community members. You know, the community members were really happy. They thought that the investigation order was well written. It included their concerns, and I have a couple slides later on to show, you know, some of the concerns that they had regarding the feasibility study. You know, the second example too, you know, PG&E issues out this annual status report, you know, in which they assess, you know, how the remedy is working and some of the proposals they're doing for the next year. So overall, you know, as John mentioned, I mean, there's been significant amount of progress, and, you know, PG&E meeting those two remedial targets, the 50 and the 10, you know, there's been a significant amount of progress over the years. And then the third is an example of when, you know, PG&E submitted a request to expand the area of plume expansion. You know, committee members had concerns. They thought that, you know, if PG&E was allowed to expand the plume, you know, some of the domestic wells might be impacted. So some of the input that and feedback that committee members had was that any domestic wells that were in that close proximity, they wanted those wells to be sampled more frequently. You know, the water board heard that. They included that suggestion into the permit, you know, and it was, I think, specifically one domestic well that was being sampled on a quarterly basis that got sampled monthly. And then for the past 2 years, you know, data that PG&E was collecting indicated that that well was not being impacted by any of those additional remedial actions in that area. So PG&E submitted a request to reduce the sampling from monthly to quarterly. It made sense. The data validated that. You know, the community was, you know, was okay with that, since we didn't see any type of fluctuation in chromium 6 in that domestic well. Next slide, please. So here's our few examples of the newsletters that we issue to the community. Typically, these newsletters were contained, you know, an update from Amanda. Amanda will provide us an update on the newsletter. You know, we'll have community updates. We'll have updates regarding PG&E's remedial update. And then it would also have key dates. So, and then we also write, you know, we'll mail it out English and Spanish. So for those community members that only speak Spanish, you know, they will have the newsletter in Spanish. Next slide, please. So here's our a few photos that we take. So we, like I mentioned before, we host an annual barbecue. You know, it's just a time for us to be able to gather with the community, just talk to them. And during the last barbecue that was in June, you know, we were able to issue a one pager of the draft amended, investigation order that the water board issued out. So we're able to, you know, provide them that information. As you can see here, our few photos, you know, the water board, Amanda, Christina, you know, they always, you know, participate in the barbecue. You know, a lot of the community members really trust them. And I think that's based, you know, because Amanda's always there, you know, talking to community members, even after meetings, you know, they'll stay there, they're communicating, they're answer community questions. And one of the things too from this year, and it just shows you, like, when we started to now, you know, community members did want a PG&E at the barbecue, and it was the first time. And it's just showing you that, you know, after so many years, and like John mentioned during his presentation, that, you know, they're able, I mean, not all community members, but, you know, there's community members that, you know, since, you know, that, you know, their PG&E's their neighbor, and they want to be able to work with them and to, you know, redefine the future of Hinckley. And, you know, for us, I mean, I thought it was a pretty big milestone for community members to invite PG&E to the annual community barbecue. And it's just, you know, and it's like a lot of progress that we've done over the years is building the trust, which, you know, it wasn't overnight. It took years for us to establish that with all the stakeholders. Next slide, please. So here's just some pictures of when Amanda coordinated a tour with some students from UC San Diego. You know, the students wanted to meet, you know, they wanted to know a little more about Hinckley. So what Amanda did, and we hosted some of these students at our office. As you can see here, you know, we at our office, we have a bunch of of posters just summarizing, you know, the different components of PG&E's remedial program. And they also wanted to talk to a few community members. So they're given the opportunity, you know, not just what they read in the news or from movies that they saw, but, you know, actually sit down, understand, you know, there's been a significant amount of progress, you know, in reducing the chromium and Hinkley, and just to talk to community members. So the students were very appreciative, you know, and what we want to do, and like I know a lot of community members want to do, is just they want to tell their story. They want to tell the story that, you know, there's people that do live in Hinkley, you know, there's the groundwater is being addressed, it's being cleaned, but it is going to take time. But, you know, there's a real story. There's people there. And, you know, that's what the students from UC San Diego want to know. They wanted to know, you know, what was, you know, how the people felt about living in Hinkley. Next slide. So here's a few photos of us at the workshop that I mentioned before that, you know, we hosted so we could get input regarding the water board's draft investigation order on PG&E's feasibility study and the background numbers. So overall, like I mentioned, I think people were really happy with what Amanda wrote on the draft investigation order. It contained all the key components that people wanted to see. And I'll have a couple of slides later on, and I'll show you that. So next slide, please. So one of the things that we do, and these are a few of the slides that, you know, the RP manager team used during that workshop, and it's something that we always mention to community members that, you know, this is a process. You know, it's not going to be done overnight. You know, sometimes it's a multi-year process. So what we share with them is, like, you know, the background study, you know, didn't take a couple of years. It was a decade-long process that, you know, first, you know, the water board had to set up a contract with the USGS. And as I mentioned, you know, there was, when we started, you know, there was not any really trust with the stakeholders. You know, one of the reasons why the USGS was brought in to conduct this background study was that they wanted a third party to be able to conduct this this study. And, you know, the water board was able to bring in, and committee members, you know, the USGS to perform this study. So like I mentioned before, it was a 10-year process. And, you know, and by the end of the process, can you, next slide, please? We were able, I mean, the USGS was able to determine the background numbers. As you can see, here's a map showing the results of the background study. And one of the things, too, we wanted to be able for the community to accept the results of the background study. And having a transparent process in which a technical working group was developed, which consisted of all the key stakeholders. You know, it had the USGS, the water board, PG&E, we were part of it, and then we had a few committee members that were part of it, you know, developing the scope of work. The USGS would provide us updates, and using this mechanism, you know, it allowed for the community to see, you know, this is a transparent process, because at the end, we wanted the community to be able to accept the results of the background study. And, you know, once it was completed, the community did accept the results, and you can see here, you know, the blue line shows the maximum extent of the chromium plume that the USGS came up with. And you can see that, you know, it's within the three different numbers. So it's, you know, on the eastern side, 2.8, the west, 3.8, and then in the north, 4.8. So, you know, there's three different numbers, and, you know, the community members wanted to know, you know, how are these three different numbers are going to be incorporated into the revised cleanup and abatement order. So next slide, please. So as I mentioned before, during the barbecue that we held back in June, we issued out this one pager just summarizing the process. So what we did, like we mentioned before, now that the background study is completed, you know, the water board issued out this draft investigation order. This investigation order contains several components to what the final remedial target is going to come out. And as you can see here, we added some of those components, like, you know, the short-term, long-term effects of every number that's going to be evaluated for the background number. But for the most part, what committee members wanted to know is how long is it going to take for PG&E to be able to reach these remedial targets? And another question, like you guys had, the cost. They also wanted to see the time, the cost, and the impact on groundwater quality. And then also, you know, what are the generation of byproducts? So, you know, all those components were included in the draft that Amanda and her team drafted. And, you know, during that workshop, community members were really happy to see their concerns were already in that draft cleanup and abatement order. I mean, investigation order, sorry. Next slide. So as I mentioned before, you know, based on the results of the of the feasibility study, you know, that's going to determine how long PG&E is going to be running their IRZ and their ATUs, and also how the plume is going to be contouring in the future. So this figure here we use to explain that to the committee members that, you know, based on the results of this feasibility study, the time and the cost of running the system is going to be impacted with the various numbers. Next figure, please. So as I mentioned before, you know, one of the things for us to be able to do is to have the community understand that, you know, it's not going to take a few months. You know, this is a multi-year process. And, you know, here's a figure just showing the different steps that we need to be able to revise this cleanup and abatement order. And as we mentioned to the community, you know, that we're just on the first step. You know, we're there. You know, the Water Board issued out this investigation order. And as John mentioned, you know, PG&E is going to be working on this feasibility study for the next year. And once they're done with that, we're going to have these different numbers. The results are going to be there. Then based on that, you know, the requirements for plume contouring, you know, how is the monitoring program going to change, and any concerns regarding the community will probably be included in that. So mentioning just to the community that, you know, this is a multi-year process, and these are the general steps that we're going to have to follow for us to be able to revise this cleanup and abatement order. Next slide, please. So just a summary, you know, we've mostly focused on the investigation order, you know, the standard reports that PG&E issues, and the allowed area plume monitoring plan. For this year, you know, we, like I mentioned before, we submit comment letters, you know, to all technical documents that PG&E issues. And for the upcoming year, you know, committee members, you know, they really want to understand, you know, the feasibility study that PG&E is going to issue next July to see, you know, how is it going to impact the remedies? Like I mentioned before, they want to understand the cost, the time, and the generation of byproducts. So, you know, we continue to provide technical outreach to the community, and we're there to answer any questions. That's my presentation. Any questions?
Thanks, Dr. Sanchez. Questions for Dr. Sanchez? Go ahead.
What is the current population of the Hinckley area compared to what it was 20 years ago?
I think when we started, there was probably closer to 2,000. I think now, because we mail out the newsletter, and I think, Anthony, what, how many? So we sent out to 168, so it's probably 500-600 people that are leaving now. So, I mean, I think during the time when there was, you know, the whole water purchase program, you know, PG&E gave an alternative to community members to either, you know, have their property purchase or have one of these. And that's during that time, I think a lot of people chose to sell their property.
Yeah. Because I think as we look to the future, I'm really curious about what this community is going to look like 30 years from now. You know, will we see housing development come back as the remediation continues? Do you have any vision for what that may look like, or any sensing?
Well, there's been for the last couple of years, and you know, the railroads building their project, there's been more interest in people wanting to know about, you know, like the water quality. So I think, you know, that might help increase the population in the area. And, you know, there's been a few community members that, you know, they've been talking to real estate agents. So one of the things, like I mentioned, we talk to groups. So we've hosted a couple of real estate agents just to give them the facts about, you know, PG&E's water quality, the program. And I mean, there is interest. And I know, you know, the last couple of years, there's been people moving in. But the population is not the same as it was like 10 years ago.
I mean, it could truly be revitalized at some point in the future, as there are housing interests. I mean, I could envision a water system, a wastewater package plant that would provide those potable services and really bring new life to the community. So let's hope the big project has a very positive impact for that, because I've, you know, been on the board long enough to see the challenges and the grieving of the community with the closing of the Hinckley School and the post office and the market, and just a total transformation of the community. I'm hopeful for its future as we see the effectiveness of this remediation.
And that's, I think, like I mentioned before, there's been community members that they want to work with PG&E because, you know, they're their neighbor. And for Hinckley to grow in the future, you got to work with your neighbor. And I think John, Jessica, you know, the PG&E team has done a really good job and, you know, building that trust over the years. So I think, you know, one of the things that committee members, they want to do, and it's like I mentioned before, you know, they invited them to the barbecue, and it's because, you know, they understand, you know, they've got to work with PG&E for the future, like you mentioned.
We've really come a long way in that relationship.
Oh, we have. And it's the party. And it's just too, you got to give Amanda a lot of credit. I mean, she's always there talking to the committee members, and, you know, the committee members really like her. And same thing, you know, with PG&E, you know, there is a point too that they didn't really want to talk to them. They didn't want to interact, but, you know, it takes years for us to mend, you know, relationships, but not everyone out there is going to always, you know, they're not going to trust PG&E, but at least there's people now in the community, you know, they want to work with them. And I think that's been not only the remediation, but also the community relationship with all the stakeholders has been one of the successful things that we've done.
Yeah, that's a really good story to tell.
Questions this direction? Yeah, Board Member Alonzo.
I have one quick question just because I don't know. Is Hinckley predominantly private wells, or is it part of a company?
No, it's domestic wells.
Is it run by a company, or is it their own property?
Yeah, their own property.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Golden State Water is, what, 2 miles away? Is that the, yeah, so they're the closest formal water company. Board Member Devers? No? All right, thank you, Dr. Sanchez. All right,
thank you.
All right, we will now move into the public comment portion of this. Do we have speaker cards or online speakers? Where are we, Ariel?
We do not. We do not have anybody.
We don't have anyone. Okay. Well, I'd just bring it back to the board. This is an update item, so we don't need to take action. We don't need a vote, but if anybody else wants to comment, question, this is a time. No? Seeing none? All right. The time being just a little after 11, we need another break. Are we okay?
Can we take 5 minutes?
Yeah.
We've got a request in for a five-minute break.
Okay. The people that you said were coming, that was the presenters. Okay, we got. Yeah, so let's take a let's go ahead and take a seven-minute break. So 11:09, we're back in action. Hopefully then everybody will be able to relax and have lunch on their own. So we're on item 8, and this is fiscal year 25-26 accomplishments and fiscal year 26-27 priorities. And we have our executive director and assistant executive director, and appreciate it. The floor is yours, Ben.
Okay, good morning, Board Chair Lux and other board members. My name is Ben Letton. I'm the executive officer for the Lahontan region, and I'll be joined today for item 8 by our assistant executive officer Jan Zimmerman and three of our division managers, TJ Minimus Clark, Mary Fiore Wagner, and Alonzo Poach. All said right there. Okay, so we bring this to you every year. This is an informational item. No action is requested or required by the board, although we really appreciate your feedback and input on this item. So we're going to be talking about the fiscal year 25-26 accomplishments. So that's the fiscal year that just ended on June 30th. And then we're going to be talking about our proposed priorities for the coming fiscal year, which July 1 through June 30th of 2027. Next slide. Here's the presentation outline. First, I'm going to cover the vision, mission, core values, and goals of the region, an executive leadership vision statement, again, the accomplishments for the fiscal year we just concluded, the priorities for the fiscal year that we're in. And then I'm going to hand it over to the division managers for some division-specific updates, and then Jan's going to jump in and talk about performance targets and a lot of changes we've seen with personnel and hiring. Next slide. So back in 2021-22 era, we did a lot of work in terms of organizational improvement, cultural shift, and one of the things that we developed was a vision statement. This is just specific to the Lahontan region. clean water for human uses, wildlife viability, and environmental resource protection for current and future generations. Next slide. And likewise, we developed a mission statement: restore, enhance, and preserve the quality of the Lahontan region's water resources and drinking water for the protection of the environment, public health, and all beneficial uses from the mountain crests to the valley floors. And so there's that was specific to Mount Whitney and Death Valley, which is a pretty unique aspect of our region. Next slide. Also, we developed core values of integrity, accountability, transparency, respect, and balance. And these values have really helped provide sort of our North Star moving forward, not only for management, but staff up and down the whole organization. Next slide. And then finally, our regional goals to protect human health and aquatic life, protect and improve aquatic resources and water quality, promote a safe work environment, provide exceptional customer service while being realistic about resources and commitments. And then we added a fifth goal a couple of years ago, which was incorporate racial equity, environmental justice considerations into all water quality related decisions and regulatory actions. Next slide. And leadership vision. Leadership, continuity and development, keeping our mission and goals in the forefront, live our core values, empower staff, and seek input at all levels, find good work-life balance, foster psychological safety, create opportunities for connection, and the cornerstones of our leadership vision, our trust, process, improvements, communication, and leadership. Next slide. So I went through all those things, the vision, mission, values, core, because it's just, it's been really the foundation for all those organizational improvements and that cultural shift that occurred many years ago. And we refer to them all the time, whether it's in an all-staff meeting, when I provide a state of the region address at the beginning of the fiscal year, we use it for prioritization of workload. It's in our, and it's in your board packet as well. For this item, which is our regional strategic narrative, so those value mission goals, values, leadership values have been just incredibly important for us. And then on to the fiscal year 25-26 accomplishments. So we had a kind of two columns here. We had really significant regional accomplishments, and then some more specific project level accomplishments. And I just want to point you to the footnote for this slide, which denotes accomplishments also recognized by staff during our April 2026 4R Day. So that was where we asked staff in some breakout exercises, you know, what do you think our biggest accomplishments were? So as an example, our 2026 staff reorganization, which is the second bullet down in the regional column, has a footnote. So that means that not only do we consider it to be a major accomplishment for the region, but staff thought so too. So I won't read all of these. I'll just, you know, pull out a couple as I'm going down. I mentioned the staff reorganization. We also had a really great face-to-face all-staff meeting in October in Bishop. We continue to make progress in terms of relationship building and partnerships, both with our counterparts at State Board, but also with the regulated community, major strides in our enforcement program. And then on the project level side, we have received some positions for some specific programs like cannabis. We made a lot of progress with our tribal beneficial use work. You heard that mentioned earlier by Jared Blumenfeld, our liaison to State Board. Big accomplishment by our racial equity working group. Really take my hat off to them in bringing you an item earlier today in terms of our racial equity action plan. Basin planning, triennial review, has seen a lot of big progress. We continue to work towards a settlement agreement and property transfer for Leviathan Mine, just to name a few. Next slide. And then regional priorities. So these are the the things that we're going to be focused on, our focus of effort really for the coming fiscal year. And again, the footnotes here are important. The first one denotes that not only are these priorities for us, but these same priorities also appear in State Board's 2026 annual strategic work plan. So we're always trying to create alignment between what State Board is prioritizing and focusing on and our own work. And then footnote two, which is are things that the staff also recognize as priorities for the coming year during that same workshop in April. So we're going to continue to focus on aquatic invasive species with a primary focus on the Tahoe Keys in Lake Tahoe, but we also discuss regularly other efforts to control and mitigate AIS throughout the region. We're going to stay focused on Mono Lake tribal beneficial use designations. Our forestry program is undergoing a lot of change as we move towards waste discharge requirements in the coming years. Our harmful algal bloom strategy continues to develop and get even better in terms of our outreach and noticing for HAB events. We continue to investigate, track chemicals of emerging concern, adopt and implement the Lahontan Racial Equity Action Plan, which I mentioned just a minute ago. Triennial review projects continue to be a big focus. Also mentioned Leviathan Mine Settlement Amendment, property transfer, that's getting close. I see that occur early this fall. MPDS backlog, we're going to focus a lot on that, as well as investigating and clean up groundwater pollution cases. Climate change, we'll likely see our strategy and mitigation planning might see some changes there as State Board is bringing a new resolution for consideration. And finally, leadership succession, staff retention, workforce development continue to be a huge priority for us. Next slide. All right, well, that ends my piece. And so now I'm going to turn it over to the division managers, and we'll start with Mr. Middlemiss Clark.
All right, thank you, Ben. And good morning, board chair and board members. As Ben said, I am TJ Middlemiss Clark. I'm the supervising water resource control engineer and facilitate the work of specifically the regulatory and cleanup division. If I could go to the next slide, please. Thank you. The division is based in South Lake Tahoe with two staff that are actually in the Victorville office. One of those staff, you might recall from earlier today, item 5, SEGS permit, was done by Todd Batty, and he's actually a part of the regulatory and cleanup division. And then also in the audience, we have Shelby Barker, who is our enforcement coordinator for the region and is based in Victorville. Despite the distance from the rest of the team, they've been a great asset over the last 4 years and really, I think, embody the one region ethos that we try to have for the whole region. Specifically on this slide, you can see our team slogan that we adopted in 2022, Just Protect It. It's definitely not ripped off from anybody else or any sort of a parody. And then you can also see a team photo from September 2025, which is missing a few of the people from the team, but captured most of us at an all-staff meeting. And you can see Todd there in the right on the back. And then if you would go to the next slide, please. Thank you. All right, so the makeup of the programs of the Regulatory and Cleanup Division. So we've got the Leviathan Mine Program, which is, as scary as it sounds, it's a large open pit mine, for those of you unfamiliar, that's based in Alpine County. It was excavated starting in the 1800s and then throughout the mid-20th century. Some might call it an eyesore. We call it a cleanup opportunity. And we've been treating discharge from it for quite a while now, about 20 years, over 20 years. And then also we have the cleanup site investigation enforcement unit. which actually handles even more than the name suggests. We have within it Department of Defense work that we do, underground storage tanks that we work on the discharge of landfills as well, and investigation, of course, at a variety of sites and enforcement work, as the name entails. For the regulatory enforcement unit, we have that split up into two different colors in the upper right of this figure that you can see on the slide. The wastewater division, hopefully is fairly obvious in the brown. And then there's the stormwater side of things, which is in the blue color. And to the bottom left, we have the enforcement component, which, as I alluded to with Shelby as the enforcement coordinator, we do quite a bit of enforcement out of the division. Next slide, please. There we go. All right, so what did we plan on doing last year? So this is our work that we were focused on last year on our divisional objectives, as we refer to them, for the fiscal year 25-26. At the bottom, you can see this adjusting to more in-office time. When we developed the objectives, we were anticipating that the return-to-office order would go into place starting at the beginning of last year as opposed to the beginning of this fiscal year. So there was a heavy focus on just what we'd have to do to adjust to being in the office more instead of the telework focus that we'd had leading up in the last few years. Working our way upwards throughout through these different objectives, we have for Leviathan Mine that focus on implementing the final remedial action. The Leviathan Mine is going through the CERCLA process and is working its way towards a remedial design and remedial action to try to continue the cleanup into perpetuity at that site. Going farther up, we have within the CSIE unit addressing the South YPCA groundwater contamination. So that continues to be a focus this year. It has been in past years as well. It was continued to be a focus last year and had been in past years. And then teaching new tools within the enforcement program as well to basically get the staff up to speed on various enforcement needs and how to approach enforcement. And then working our way up to some of the last two items, those are both out of the regulatory enforcement unit. We had really focused on trying to clear the NPDES permit backlog for the last few years. And that was a challenge for us because basically, we cleared out all the low-hanging fruit in the first couple of years that we were trying to focus on that backlog, and then we got to a space where we were having more issues with getting like the reported waste discharge, which then allows us to initiate the new permit, or even some dischargers who weren't sure if they wanted to continue to discharge. So we were struggling a little bit with that tail end of the backlog. Next slide, please. And finally, what do we plan? Oh, too far. There we go. Thank you. What do we plan on doing this year? So again, starting with that foundation of sort of the behavioral norms component or the how we interact with each other component at the bottom is actually this year cataloging of behavioral norms. We have historically been doing this at the unit team level, but we haven't always cataloged it at the various management levels. And so one of the things we're going to look at doing this year is to catalog our own behavioral norms within the leadership component of the division, and then share that with the rest of the team. Working our way upwards again to Leviathan Mine, we're looking at trying to finalize a property transfer that's going to be done from the state, who currently owns the property, to ARC, who Atlantic Richfield Company, who is the co-responsible party at the site, and then also comply with USAPA orders, which we have to do every year. And then moving up to the CSIE unit, we'd like to try to wrap up the South Y PC groundwater contamination. There were two CAOs that have been adopted in the within roughly last year for that site, and so we are doing some oversight currently, as well as wrapping up some other work on that. And then working our way farther up, for the enforcement program, we're looking at recalibrating around a new prosecution team lead For those of you who've been around for the past year, we got a new AEO about a year ago, and the AEO acts also as the prosecution team lead. And then working our way up from there to the regulatory enforcement unit, we're pivoting from that backlog of MPS permits to trying to manage the stormwater programs. There are updates being done right now on both the construction and industrial stormwater permits at the state level, and we're trying to make sure that those are tailored to meet the needs of the region, and then also keep abreast of the compliance within our stormwater programs, which has been a challenge. And then finally, preparing for future AIS management as well within the regulatory enforcement unit, because we are seeing a lot of challenges around various aquatic invasive species in our surface water bodies across the region. And with that, I will hand it over to Mary.
Okay. Next slide. Well done, TJ. Good morning. We're still morning, I think. Okay. Good morning, Board Chair Lux. Welcome, Board Member Alonzo. And hello again, board members. I am Mary Fiore Wagner, an environmental program manager that oversees the Compliance and Planning Division in the South Lake Tahoe office. The Compliance and Planning team is a diverse group of scientists, engineers, geologists, scientific aides, and we share a deep-rooted passion and commitment to the mission, vision, and values of the Water Board. And we don't do this alone. We are supported by a very dedicated admin staff, a very meticulous and careful, astute legal counsel. Thank you, Elizabeth, and great support from our executive team. So the photos and those on the next slide, they demonstrate that we aren't siloed in our division or within our units. Our division is collaborative and cohesive. We freely share knowledge. We seek and leverage expertise across units, and we partner with other divisions and specialists to strengthen our work, but also to build on the One Region initiative. These two photos were taken during our most recent semi-annual all-division meetings, so we hold these twice a year. And it always includes an off-site field trip where invited guests and staff can showcase a project that they've worked on and talk about challenges and some of the successes. Next slide, please. Oh, sorry. This slide represents the three unique units in the division, including forestry dredge and fill, non-point source, planning and assessment, and also our regional monitoring coordinator. The narrative under each unit serves as a high-level functional org chart and details some of the major programs and projects that the teams work on. I thought it was important to show this slide because it's more inclusive of the complex, important, and diverse workload in our division. And though some of these topics are not represented on the slides that you'll see next, we recognize that it takes all team members and all contributions to be successful in our mission. Some of these topics, they're really well run. We're doing a great job. Just to point out tribal coordination and our HAB coordinator, our regional monitoring coordinator teams really well to do training, not only for the community, but also for staff. We're doing a good job with these tasks. That's when we shift to the next slide, which we've identified these as the 25-26 priorities. And these are areas we want to identify and highlight that need maybe a little work and a little attention, whether that's a process improvement or working better with the discharge, making more efficiencies and success with outcomes. So here we celebrated some wins and we realized some adjustments were needed to stay true to our values and remain balanced. Here are just a few highlights. field presence. We heard earlier from Board Member Deaver and also Board Member Alonzo that it's really critical to be in the field to do outreach. And we've really stepped up our field presence. This has had gains not only for the regulated community projects, project proponents, but also for staff, because it's allowed for cross-unit training, mentorship, and transfer of knowledge from journey to apprentice-level staff. In particular, our staff paired with other unit staff to gain familiarity with stormwater control, and also we looked at road improvement projects that will later be part of the West Fork Carson River Vision Plan, some improvements that are needed in that area. And this is an area where we have seen great dividends as far as professional growth and competency among staff. The next one is cutting the green tape. This is in line with one of our regional priorities of ticking off some of those projects that were identified on the triennial review. This is referred to as Table 4.1 in the Basin Plan, and it contains categories that are considered to be low threat to water quality that may not need an exemption to a basin plan prohibition. We are trying to expand the categories that fall into that, so hopefully we can increase the pace and scale, mostly for restoration projects. But we're also looking at pole and utility projects and pier replacements. I want to point this one out, renew Lake Tahoe Marina General Permit. This is where we stalled a bit on this one due to partly staff vacancy, extended medical leave. But I want to highlight this objective because it provides a good example of how the 4R-day process works to help staff maintain a sustainable and realistic pace. So through the 4R-day process, we determined if this divisional objective should be carried forward. And we decided we need to direct more attention to a project that may deliver the most substantial benefits towards lakewide AIS control, weed control, given the resources we can allocate. Also, effectiveness of the dredge and fill program. This is a largely process improvement, developing, refining, and inspection software system, an iPad where we use Survey 123. This has been really efficient in the field. Staff can record observations and compliance, and it automatically generates a staff inspection report. So it saves a lot of time. Compliance with the 2024 waiver. This is also a regional objective that's identified in the strategic narrative. And then vision plan implementation. We've seen a lot of success in this area. Some of you on the board were involved with the adoption of two of these advanced restoration plans, or vision plans, as we call them. It's another regulatory option in lieu of a total maximum daily load. And it's a very collaborative effort with stakeholders. And the hope is implementation of these plans may more immediately benefit and be practical for restoring water quality because of this collaborative approach. So I'll just highlight a few. In the West Fork Carson River, two standout accomplishments were the completion of the West Fork Carson Prioritization Project by Alpine Watershed Group. It was funded by a Clean Water Act Section 319 grant, which our staff helped shepherd that. And basically, it produced a sediment budget for the river, and it provides a science-based roadmap for targeted restoration efforts and other actions that are needed to improve water quality. Another notable achievement is the transition of OTS, on-site wastewater treatment systems, along the West Fork Carson River. One at the Desolation Hotel in Hope Valley, it transitioned from an on-site treatment system to export off. Line. There were also improvements at the campground where it also replaced its on-site wastewater treatment system. Okay, next slide, please. So for the fiscal year 26-27, the division has identified six top priority projects where improvements and actions are needed. When achieved, these divisional objectives will result in water quality improvements and or protections, as well as operational improvements that will help the team operate more efficiently. As you can see, the first three are carried over from last year. They're multi-year projects, and we'll continue to make progress on those. We've added strengthening the compliance and planning division's culture and effectiveness. You've already heard that this is woven through our region at the top level. It's also included in the TJ's division, and I think we'll hear from Alonzo. It's included in his. But specifically for the compliance and planning, we are continuing to evolve and onboard new staff. So this is key for us. We want to set all our employees up for success by investing time and energy into maintaining that positive culture, upholding our values, and promoting psychological safety. That's not optional for us. It's a strategic necessity, really. And it's the bedrock upon which all regional objectives should be built. I always say humans and people in our agency are the best resource. So this is worth the investment in carrying out our mission. Tribal beneficial uses also, it aligns nicely with a state board initiative and priority, and also our regional priority. Not only do we want to engage with the Kutsetika tribe and get that across the finish line, but we are making progress in expanding our outreach to other tribes. We've had interest from Bridgeport, Modoc Tribe, Washoe, Bishop, Lone Pine, Paiute tribes as well. So this is great news. Continue that engagement. And then mentioned earlier, too, Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association case handling. This is where we're pivoting from the update of the Lake Tahoe Marina General Permit. We're going to focus on the Tahoe Keys WDRs. We've prioritized that case handling because aquatic invasive species present in the Tahoe Keys system have the potential to spread to other areas of Tahoe. So in reviewing the division's workload, it became clear that directing additional staff resources to that would yield greater benefits to proactively manage the lake-wide spread of AIS. Now I'll turn it over to Alonzo, who will share updates about the great work coming out of our Protection, Restoration, and Sustainability Division. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Good morning, Board Chair and Board Members. I am Alonzo Poach. I'm a Supervising Engineering Geologist and Division Manager of the division formerly known as the South Lawton Basin Division. Historically, the division's name was derived from its geographical location, working on projects and programs south of Conway Summit. But I'm happy to officially unveil the rebrand with you today. The division is now known as the Protection, Restoration, and Sustainability Division. This name now more closely aligns with the focus and mission of the units within the division, rather than just the geography. On the slide here is a picture of the Oak Hills area rainbow, courtesy of Lorian Sanders, who is our unofficial division photographer. Seems like every time we come up with a photo, it's taken by her. Her photo was also featured in last year's Priorities and Accomplishments presentation. Next slide, please. This is a functional org chart of the division. Our staff of 30 professionals includes a division manager, a regional groundwater specialist, administrative support staff, four technical units, including the land disposal, Department of Defense, wastewater and agriculture, and surface water and cannabis units. On the chart beneath each technical unit are the water quality programs that the unit manages. As a division, our primary focus is waste discharges to land, cleanup of soil and groundwater pollution, and protecting our surface waters. You'll notice a big difference in this year's functional org chart as we've added a new unit. The surface water and cannabis unit was created with the reestablishment of our cannabis regulatory program this last year and moving our 401 and dredge and fill and stormwater programs from the land disposal unit and into that unit in an effort to align complementary programs and overall balance the size of our units. Next slide, please. Our successes from FY25-26, the division celebrated many successes, and here are a few highlights. We completed a reorg that added a new unit and aligned complementary programs. We rebranded the division to align with the folks and mission rather than geography. Talk about a couple of norms. A few years ago, the land disposal unit implemented a fun norm revolving around sharing unique snacks to boost staff morale. I'm happy to report that norm spread to several other team members through the office. I think I've tried every flavor of Oreo cookie imaginable. We've continued implementation of our confined animal dairy facility strategy. A board order was just adopted today for Dutch Dairy that was a result of efforts from the last fiscal year. Another example of interdivisional support and collaboration is all of our divisions participated in reoccurring meetings revolving around the Southern California Logistics Airport and former George Air Force Base. You may know that those are co-located. Once George Air Force Base was closed down, Southern California Logistics Airport was formed. Many of the programs there intersect, including the DOD cleanup, construction stormwater, 401 dredge and fill, site cleanup, and wastewater programs. Next slide, please. Where we're going in FY 26 and 27, there are five divisional objectives that guide our prioritizing our work for the coming year. They have not changed in the last several years. They include recruiting, retaining, and onboarding new staff as we work to a fully staffed division. We still have a few vacancies that we're looking to fill soon within the division and in the office. Continue and investigate and track constituents of emerging concern. Salt nutrient management plans to mitigate effects on water quality. Investigating and cleaning up groundwater pollution affecting drinking water supply and or threatening human health. Making enforcement a priority, starting with the lowest level enforcement to bring dischargers back into compliance through progressive enforcement and moving through that as necessary. With the realignment of programs and addition of a new unit within the division, one of the key focuses will be finding new norms within our division. We envision that the realignment of the programs within the division will enable staff to more effectively focus on respective programs and work at a more sustainable pace. Additionally, we'll focus on embracing process improvements and utilizing new technology, such as AI and automation, to enhance our work efficiency. That concludes the report out for the new PRS division, and I'll hand it over to Jan Zimmerman. Thank you.
Thank you, Alonzo. Good morning, board chair and members of the board. I'm Assistant Executive Officer Jan Zimmerman, and I'll present the remainder of today's presentation, starting with performance targets. So thank you. The photograph on this slide has nothing to do with performance targets, but I wanted to share it with you because it's one of the four photo contest winners that we had this year. It's titled "A Rare Sight to See on a Cold March Morning in Antelope Valley," and it was taken east of Air Force Plant 42 in Palmdale by Todd Batty. So next slide. The Water Board started tracking performance targets for certain output measures beginning in fiscal year 2009-2010. Targets are goals that establish measurable levels of performance to be achieved within a specified time period, generally by fiscal year, and are typically measured in the form of number of, so number of permits adopted, number of basin plan amendments adopted, and so on. Actual work achieved is then compared to targets to assess and describe performance. Targets are established by each individual regional water board and some in consultation with the state water board. So in establishing the targets, the regional boards consider their unique differences and needs within their watersheds, their work priorities, and their organizational resources. So each regional board has a different target. The work or target categories that have targets, you can see on the slide, are TMDLs, or total maximum daily loads, either water body combinations addressed or adopted, basin plan amendments adopted, number of permits adopted, and those are only new or revised permits count, the number of inspections performed, formal enforcement completed, and cleanup sites closed or put into active remediation. There's a few others, but those are the primary ones. Next slide. So since fiscal year 2009-2010, State Board has prepared what are called performance reports for each region. The performance reports look at each target category and how well the region did to meet the target for that category. There's a percent achieved for each category, and then they also provide a more general average percent achieved for all targets combined. So this slide shows a comparison of average percentage of targets achieved for Region 6, the blue column, compared to the statewide average of all the regional boards, the orange column. The y-axis is average percent targets achieved, and the x-axis is fiscal year. You can see on the graph, I'm just going to talk about half of the graph now, that from fiscal year 17-18, we made year-over-year improvements in targets met. Then you can see in fiscal year 24-25, we dropped from over 80% met to 61%. And you might be wondering why. We've asked ourselves that same question. What happened? What was different that year? So when I looked back, and we all looked back, the targets are very similar between 23-24 and 24-25. So it's not like we were making our targets farther out of reach for us. We do also have some questions for State Board regarding how tracking is counting. We think there's some discrepancy in the data that we input with the data that's mined out of the databases. So we'll be talking with them next month to get some clarity on that. And also, in fiscal year 24-25, we had a higher vacancy rate. We were nearly 10% at our vacancy rate. So we were down with the number of staff. But one thing that's not shown in the data here, and from my perspective, part of what we see is that life happened, right? In 24-25, and I don't want to cry, we rallied around our executive officer, Mike Plasiak, as he battled cancer. And then he passed away towards the end of fiscal year 24-25. He was truly an exceptional leader for us. So that drop in targets, I think, isn't a sign that we gave up. It's a sign that we cared. And I care about everybody. It's not a setback, it's a step back, so that we can launch forward again. And I predict that beginning in fiscal year 24-25, it'll be the start of another decades-long trajectory upward in meeting our performance targets. And I think Mike would be proud. Next slide. So this is our reflections on last year. While State Board hasn't released a performance report for last year, our initial calculations show that we're tracking an average of 65% targets met, which is an improvement over last year and one step up in our trajectory. So key considerations that affected how we met our targets last year include increased field presence. So we really have stepped it up, and that's led to exceeding our inspection targets for quite a few years in a row. And being out in the field, we're seeing compliance issues, and we have met our enforcement target last year. Also, staff turnover and non-responsive discharges have meant that, you know, we missed our permit target. Those are the hardest ones to achieve when we're relying on someone to provide us the information we need to write a permit, or we don't have a permit writer to write the permit. Also, we set aside our basin planning target, and that created a capacity for us to work on the high-priority triennial review objectives. And then finally, process efficiencies led to exceeding the cleanup site closure target. So we did good. We're doing better. Next slide. So our projections for next year, our targets are very similar. And we expect that we may have aimed low because we have introduced our new cannabis unit that will be an increase in our inspections, and we feel that our enforcement will also increase as well. Our vacancy rate is the lowest it's been in a long time. We'll talk more about that in the next couple slides. And our continued field presence is, I think, one of our greatest assets and when it comes to doing great things for water quality, being out in the field. Next slide. So now I'd like to transition into personnel and hiring. Specifically, we'll look at our vacancies, our promotions, our transfers, new hires, retirements and separations, and board members' appointments for the period of July. This is only for July 2025 through July 2026. And the photo on this slide is the second of our four photo contest winners. It's titled A Beautiful Fall Day at the Lake Tahoe Golf Course, taken of the Upper Truckee River by Brian Talmadge. We have wonderful photographers. Next slide. So vacancies. The chart on the left shows a comparison of July 2025 to July 2026 for our vacancy rate. It also includes the authorized positions and the number of vacancies. And I want to point out that since July 2025, we've grown by 5 positions. How fantastic is that? 2 of those new positions were added to the organization in July of this year and are the 2 of the 3 current vacancies shown on the list to the right. One is an engineering geologist that will be in the surface water and cannabis unit, and the second is a water resource control that will be housed in the forestry dredge and fill unit. The third vacancy that we're going to be recruiting for is an environmental scientist in the non-point source unit. I'll point out the other 3 vacancies, the other 3 new positions that we receive this year as we move through the next slides. The photo at the top is the third contest winner. It's titled A Baby Red-Winged Blackbird Taken in the Hot Creek Floodplain by Bridget Moffitt. Next slide. So this slide lists the internal promotions between July 2025 and July 2026. I'm not going to read them all off, but it's so rewarding to be able to promote from within the organization, and we have such great talent, and I'm so excited for all of these people listed here. Next slide. Transfers. So these include both internal transfers from one unit to another or transfers to Lahontan from another state agency. And I'd like to point out that Michael Perez filled the Senior Water Resource Control Engineer Supervisor of the Cannabis Unit, and this is one of the new positions that we added to the organization in 2025. Next slide. So new hires. These are new to state service employees. The environmental scientist and water resource control engineer positions on the top row were the 2 cannabis positions that were swept from the organization in 2024. They were gone. They were off the org chart. But somebody crunched the numbers, and due to programmatic needs and funding, these 2 positions were actually returned to us in July 2025, and we quickly backfilled them. So we welcome Fred Brott and Omar Orozco to the unit. And we also brought on 2 new analyst positions with Allison Churko and Kylie Jean. Next slide. Retirements. We did have to say goodbye to 3 of our great friends, but we're keeping in touch, and
Instagram is great. Katrina Fleshman, Eric Shea, who his last day was just last month, and Cynthia White, all retired, and we wish them well. Next slide. Board member appointments and separations. So we welcome new board member Edwin Alonzo and a second, Courtney Henderson. And we said goodbye to former board members Amy Horn and Esra Mustafavi. Next slide. So I just want to share with you some final thoughts from your executive team. We achieved a lot in fiscal year 25-26, and we have a lot to be proud of. We're excited about the year ahead. There's lots of great projects. We have amazing talent, and the organization is growing. Our mission, vision, and values and goals are our cornerstones, and we're committed to leadership succession, staff retention, and workforce development. We value the importance of work-life balance, being able to leave work at work when you can, and continue creating connection and building strong organizational culture. So the background photo on this slide is the last of the four contest winners this year. It's retitled Reflections and was taken by me at Mac Lake. Next slide. So I just want to echo what Mary said. You know, the people are our greatest resource in the organization. And this photograph is your amazing team and talented team, most of them, that existed in October 2025. But this was at our all-staff meeting, and it was just an amazing time for us to collaborate and build friendships and partnerships within the organization, and we're just stronger because of it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen, and thanks to everyone. Thanks to EJ and Mary and Alonzo and Ben. Questions or comments from board members for any either particular staff member, executive officer, or anybody? Let me look this way. Yeah.
I just have a kind of a general question. As you're looking at the priorities for the upcoming fiscal year, do you go through the exercise of evaluating the PYs that are needed for each of the tasks that you're focusing on for the upcoming year, or do you get that granular in your planning?
We certainly consider PYs, not necessarily PYs that are needed, although we think about that. We're more limited by PYs that we have. What can we do with what we have? And if we realize we have more than we want to do than we can do, then we will request an increase in those personnel years. Mm-hmm. But those are hard to get. But we have grown by 5 PYs, so it's not impossible.
Well, I'm surprised with the budget that we haven't lost any PYs this year. That's been wonderful. With the return to work that the governor had announced, can somebody share the status of that? Are we returning to work 4 days a week, or is that still in negotiations?
Yeah, it began implementation right around July 1st.
Okay.
So, yeah, staff are required to work in the office 4 days a week and then with one telework day per week.
Okay. And then probably lastly for Alonzo, since you've added surface water, you may want to change or expand your slogan instead of just Guardians of the Groundwater. So.
I did think of that, and that's one of the reasons I didn't say it.
I saw it on your site, though. I caught it. I look forward to seeing what you come up with. And, Jan, I wouldn't be surprised. I can't imagine that we've done that much less work. I wouldn't be surprised if the analytics at the state board level aren't just aligning differently to show that reduction in performance. So I'd be curious, after you have those conversations, if that number might increase, because from every evidence I have, everyone has their shoulder to the wheel and they're working their hearts out. So thank you.
I appreciate that. One thing I didn't mention is that State Board has a new analyst that did transition right about that time, so they need to get up to speed on what they're looking at too.
Board Member Pierce? Board Member Dever? Remember, Alonzo. I just have one, and it's a predictable one. Maybe Ben answer for me. The editorial and cleanup changes to the basin plan seems to have vanished from both accomplishments and priorities. And I'm just kind of curious. I know you had something in there about triennial review projects, but I didn't see specifically basin plan. And I kind of think I heard maybe basin plan got put on hold a little bit, or. Anyway, where are we there?
No, that's still a priority. I mean, that was listed as a fiscal year 26-27 priority training review projects or issues, and so that's all encapsulating everything there. In fact, I don't know if Mary has an update, but as I understand it, we're moving forward well with that editorial changes, you know, basin plan amendment.
Okay, great. Yeah,
no, we are moving forward with that and hope to bring it to the board for your consideration by the end of next calendar year.
Great. Maybe thank sooner. You. Thanks so much, Mary Mim. That's it for me. Anybody else? All right. Thank you. And thanks for that item, the good work, and the thorough presentation. And I will echo Board Member Cox's comment about the metrics. I suspect there's that curve may represent more sort of metric changes. The other part of that is, you know, simply adding up numbers doesn't always tell the story. You know, one permit can take months and months of time. Another can take, you know, weeks of time. And that's hard to do, but you do your best, right? So thanks to everybody. All right, the last item, second to last item, number 9, Ben, Executive Officer Report. Go ahead.
Can I get the presentation? All right, item 9, Ben Lutton, Executive Officer. I'll keep this one relatively short, given that we had quite lengthy accomplishments and priorities prior. Next slide. So I'll start with personnel updates. So these are personnel updates since the last board meeting. Keep that in mind. So in terms of promotions, Sandra Lopez promoted to our regional administrative officer. She replaces Eric Shea, who retired a couple weeks ago. So congratulations, Sandra. New hires, David Corral, engineering geologist in the Department of Defense unit. I think he backfilled Lorian's position as she promoted to supervisor. And then Adam Henriquez, environmental scientist in the forestry dredge and fill. Adam worked for us in the past, and then he worked for California Tahoe Conservancy for a little bit, and then he realized the water board in Lahontan's a pretty great place to work, so he came back. So that's sort of a staff retention, but in a circuitous way. Separations and retirements. Again, Eric Shea retired. Big shoes to fill, but Sandra will do a great job. And then vacancies. Right now we have environmental scientists in the non-point source unit in South Lake Tahoe, engineering geologists in the service water and cannabis unit in Victorville, water resource control engineer position in the forestry dredge and fill unit in South Lake Tahoe, and then an analyst to position, administrative unit position in Victorville. Next slide. Okay, so just real quickly, your board packet for item 9, starting on bait stamp 9-1, includes executive officer report for a couple months, the first one in April. Just want to highlight a number of articles in the April EO report. Starting on bait stamp 9-6, we have an article titled Department of Defense Cleanup Program 2026 Memorandum of Understanding for Land Use Controls, written by Lorian Sanders. We also have a standing item. So this is an item that we bring to you every year. It's an update on the salt and nutrient management plan in the Lahontan region that's written by our groundwater specialist, Anna Garcia. And then finally, also a standing item on our on-site wastewater treatment system, or OTS program, by Jose Valle de Leon. So, and those Jose's article is on bait stamp 9-9. Next slide. And then for May, we have just two articles. The first one starts on bait stamp 9-22. It's written by Megan Walsh. It's titled Second Advancing Restoration Interagency Summit. A lot of that had to do with cutting the green tape initiative from California Natural Resources Agency. And then the last article, or the second article, is written, co-wrote by Lorian Sanders, Anna Garcia, Danny McClure, and Eli Balderas, about an Earth Day event that they attended as part of their tribal outreach. I think it was also part of the outreach for the racial equity work that we're doing. And that starts on bait stamp 9-24. Next slide. Okay, so I'm going to invite Shelby Barker up to the podium here. She's going to provide an update on the quarterly violations and unauthorized discharge report, and that's for reference on bait stamp 9-27 in your packet.
Thank you, Ben. Good afternoon, Board Chair Lux and fellow board members. My name is Shelby Barker. I'm a senior engineering geologist, technical specialist, and the enforcement coordinator for the region. In your packet, you'll find the first quarter 2026 violations and unauthorized discharge report on bait stamps 9-27 through 9-33. During the first quarter, there were 25 alleged violations identified. Details for each of these violations are provided in the report. With that said, I'd like to highlight two particular violations. On January 3rd, 2026, a tractor-trailer lost control on I-80 in Truckee upon hitting the guardrail. The saddle tank on that side did rupture, releasing approximately 35 gallons to the seasonal ditch that does drain into the Truckee River. Caltrans did immediately respond, and they conducted the cleanup for that spill. The other violation that I would like to highlight occurred February 19th, 2026. While conducting an inspection in Trona, the San Bernardino County staff identified a sanitary sewer overflow. Approximately 10,000 gallons of sewage was discharged to ground from a broken sewer line. The line was repaired. The county contractor that they hired did conduct all of the cleanup, and they did provide a spill report to our Lahontan staff. And that is the update for the violations report. If there's any questions on that.
Any questions? Nope. Thanks so much,
Shelby. Back to Ben.
Appreciate
it.
Yep. Back to Ben.
Okay, next slide, please. Okay. Also, I believe I wanted to talk about the 2027 board schedule. So although not in your board packet, there are hard copies, I believe, in the back here for the public, and that I think Ariel distributed hard copies to you as well. So we do our best to start with a draft schedule, and then it kind of it may be adjusted, you know, over time before we bring it back to you in on October 1st, which is the next board meeting, and then we would like the board to vote to approve the schedule for 2027. So these are tentative, and there's we try to do our best in sequencing the meetings in terms of location. So you'll see in the location column you know, the first regular board meeting being in either Barstow or Victorville, followed by Bishop. So a couple months later, South Lake Tahoe, Bishop, Barstow, Victorville, South Lake Tahoe. So a little bit of a rotation. And then we also try to space the dates out so that we have ample time to prepare these board meetings. As you know, it's quite a bit of work. And then you'll note at the top a January 13th date, which I just kind of plugged in there for a board retreat. Jeff, you and I talked about a board retreat sometime this winter now that we're getting more of a full complement of the board, six board members. So we just, Ariel and I selected a date that's also, you know, negotiable or adjustable. So what I'm asking the board to do is to take a look at all this and provide Ariel feedback about your availability. Your availability per the schedule, and provide her that feedback by the next board meeting when we can bring the adjusted schedule back to you, if that makes sense. I think that's all I wanted to add on this slide. Next slide. All right, and that concludes my report. These are just some shots of my own from areas in your beautiful region. If Jared Blumenfeld were still on the line, I bet you he could take a stab at where these are approximately, because they're along the Pacific Crest Trail, just south of Desolation Wilderness in El Dorado County. And with that, I'll take any questions or comments.
Questions or comments? I'll look to my right. Board Member Alonzo. Member Dever. No? All right.
All right. And I just... Well done. On the performance targets, I just wanted to agree with you, Jeff, and Kimberly, that I think that there's probably a combination of just the metrics involved in assessing those for 24, 25. And you know, there's other factors that are included in that, like information that we're waiting from dischargers and things of that nature. So we'll be right back on track in no time. And just want to extend my welcome to Edwin Alonzo, new board member. It's great to have you here. And we should have another board member onboarded and ready to go by our board meeting on September 30th and October 1st in Tahoe.
Yeah, great. I also, again, welcome you. And do you have any comments you want to make or anything you want to say? Just kind of a welcome.
Just thank you for the welcome, the warm welcome. It looks like your staff's doing a great job, and I appreciate all your work.
Thanks so much. All right, the last item is board member requests for future items and then anything else for the good of the order. So do we have any special items we're looking at? No. This way? No? Lots of head shaking. All right, well, then there is no closed session, as I understand it, correct? No items. Thanks to everybody, and thanks to staff, and thanks to the crew back there. It's 12:16. We moved through this one pretty efficiently. We are adjourned. Go have some lunch.